with us now, walk the plank. I don't actually like the mornings where you find yourself under attack from both sides. People remaining loyal to Keir Starmer and feeling that he's a man more sinned against than sinning. And then I'll get an equal number of messages from people claiming that I'm sticking up for him and it's all my fault. The truth lies somewhere between the two stools, doesn't it? And it is ultimately a question of competence.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, the Prince and Princess of Wales say they're deeply concerned by the continued revelations from the Jeffrey Epstein files. The latest allegations suggest Andrew Mountbatten Windsor shared confidential information with Epstein when he was UK trade envoy. Andrew has consistently and always strongly denied any wrongdoing over his links to the late sex offender. LBC's Henry Riley is following developments.
This is the first time we've heard from the Prince and Princess of Wales regarding the Epstein scandal. A spokesperson from Kensington Palace said that William and Kate were deeply concerned by the revelations and were focused on the victims. The Prince is heading to Saudi Arabia for the start of a three-day tour of the Middle Eastern country.
Sir Keir Starmer will address Labour MPs later as he fights to save his job following the Lord Mandelson scandal. His Chief of Staff, Morgan McSweeney, resigned yesterday. He said he took full responsibility for advising the Prime Minister to appoint the peer as US ambassador. Speaking to LBC, the Labour peer Baroness Smith rejected claims that Sir Keir is looking to pass the blame.
As soon as it became clear the extent of Peter Mandelson's relationship with Jeffrey Epstein, the Prime Minister fired him. Secondly, he has apologised to Jeffrey Epstein's victims for making this decision.
The Foreign Secretary Yvette Cooper says the government will rapidly engage with China on the case of Jimmy Lai. The Hong Kong media tycoon and pro-democracy campaigner has been sentenced to 20 years in prison. The 78-year-old, who is a British citizen, was found guilty of foreign collusion and sedition. Universities have been told to report threats of foreign interference directly to the government and security services. MI5 and the National Cyber Security Centre have given a rare briefing to more than 70 institutions. University leaders were given guidance on how to recognise and resist attempts to manipulate their work. And a consortium led by the delivery firm FedEx has agreed to buy the parcel locker firm InPost for £6.8 billion. They plan to expand the service across the UK and Europe. In this city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 30 at 10,400. The pound buys $1.35 and €1.14. LBC weather, cloudy, without breaks of rain for the morning. Heavy rain will push into the southwest by the late afternoon, a high of 11 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Tesco Insurance are driving down the cost of motoring with 10% off car insurance. Take out a car insurance policy before the 15th of May 2026 and you'll get 10% off with club card prices. We offer a range of cover options so you can choose the one that's right for you. Save 10% when you buy or renew a car policy with Tesco Insurance. Search Tesco Car Insurance and get a quote direct today. Club card required. Excludes add-ons. T's and C's apply.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It's 3 minutes after 10 is the time. In a world of confusion and flux, chaos and unprecedented change, it's somehow reassuring to know that some things will remain constant. Somebody said to me yesterday, I can't wait until Kemi Badenoch explains why the entire Mandelson scandal is down to her deft questioning at PMQs. And I laughed, thinking it was a joke, which it was. But it wasn't, because she is now, I think, explaining why the whole Mandelson scandal is down to her deft questioning at PMQs. God, give me the confidence of Kemi Badenoch. Honestly. It's all about the cults, isn't it? I think. Or at least my job is today. Or at least what makes me approach something I love, talking about politics with clever people. That's you, that is. With a little bit more trepidation than I might feel on another day. Is because of the brickbats that will come in from various angles towards little old me, towards your humble presenter. And there are three cults. What a bunch of cults that I have identified. Two of which I think are very, very cultish. And one of which is only mildly cultish, but towards which I feel a lot more warmth than I do towards the other two. So there are three cults, all of whom pollute our ability to have a sensible conversation about the unalloyed mess that Keir Starmer finds himself in this morning. We'll start with the first cult, actually, and that would be the cult that contends Keir Starmer is not actually in a mess and that everything is created by the media. And to personalise it for a moment, as I must, because I'm me, I am now guilty of joining in on an unjustified and an unfair pylon instead of, very carefully, and if I'm honest with you, because we all suffer from a little bit of footballification, and my tribe is the one that doesn't want the corruption, the cronyism and the chaos, most obviously typified by Boris Johnson and the heir apparent, of course, being Nigel Farage. My tribe is the one that doesn't want to go back to anything like that again, to Liz Truss's economics, to Boris Johnson's contempt for norms and rules and regulations, to Brexit's contempt for gravity and observable reality. I don't want those people to have another go. That is my tribe. And the biggest... do you have a problem with words? Are there any words in your brain that you always think you've got a bit wrong? Bulwark. You know bulwark, B-U-L-W-A-R-K. Is that how you pronounce it? You don't pronounce it like a castrated male bovine. It's bulwark. Is it bulwark? I think it, well, anyway, Keir Starmer was the biggest bulwark against that. And of course, for the time being, at least, still is. So that's where my biases lie. Can you call someone biased when what they are opposed to is idiocy, incompetence, corruption, and, national self-harm? I don't know, but, you know, that's where we are. So cult number one, I'm afraid, contains the Starmer cultists, the people, and I think I probably get a slightly unrepresentative exposure to those people, because I fully appreciate that you feel I'm letting you down. But what I've done is very carefully and very reluctantly chronicle the various stages on the path to where we are today. And it is a path replete with many milestones, whether you want to call them U-turns or mind changes, or whether you want to call them missteps or aberrations, mistakes or failures, whatever you want to call them. You can't, of course, call them scandals, because they weren't, but the Mandelson thing is. You would have to properly map them to the point where we are today, and I'm afraid that makes you mildly cultish if you're pretending that this is somehow a conspiracy or that this is lots of people are behaving unfairly. They behaved unfairly when they had a go at him about his glasses and the donkey sanctuary and all the other personalised things that right-wing media will always do. But there has to come a point where you acknowledge that actually there are some very real problems here, and they are today looking very, very close to insurmountable. So that's your first and perhaps less obvious cult. Unless you are me on Blue Sky, you may not actually see that, or indeed glancing at my inbox on a Monday morning like today, you may not actually see much evidence of the people who believe that Starmer is still much more sinned against than sinning, even as his own carefully assembled project begins to fall apart at the seams. The other two cults are very obvious, and they are much bigger cults. Some might go so far as to say they're massive cults, or at least they contain massive cults. The first is the Johnson one, which has found a leader. I saw a headline this morning under Richard Madeley's byline, saying something like, this proves that Boris Johnson was treated unfairly. I thought you had to be a brain dead caller to a radio phone-in station to make that point. I didn't realise you could be a professional journalist. This proves that Boris Johnson was treated unfairly. So there is an example of a massive cult. Boris Johnson somehow being the real victim here. Boris Johnson, whose list of actual scandals, as we covered on Fridays, we don't really need to do it again, but egregious, law-breaking, hideous breaches of ministerial codes and traditions and security service advice. I mean, absolutely off the charts. Moral corruption, and quite possibly political corruption as well. So to come to this by sort of seeing it through a lens of Boris Johnson being being badly treated is evidence of cultishness on a scale that's visible from space. And they have a spiritual leader now in Richard Madeley. And then, of course, the other cult is the Corbyny cult, who are so delighted that a man who actually got elected Prime Minister as leader of the Labour Party has come a massive cropper that they've forgotten what they will leave the door open to if they're too busy celebrating to actually start resisting the real opposition of anything vaguely left-wing in this country, which is, of course, the two right-wing parties that would be doing very well out at this moment, and the multiplicity of right-wing media. So you have three cults. You have the biggest cult of all, Boris Johnson and his fans, led today by Richard Madeley. You have the second biggest cult of all, which is, of course, Jeremy Corbyn and his fans, contending today that this is, I don't even know what they're contending, but that Keir Starmer is the Antichrist. He's a genocidal maniac who's had it coming forever. And then you have the cult of Starmer. I don't know how many heart attacks we're having today. Nate is standing in for Keith today. It's his first ever shift, and the poor fella is just hovering over that bus. He's got Ofcom in both ears at the moment. How many cults can a radio presenter say without coming a cropper? I don't know, and I should stop playing that game because it's not even funny. And then you've got the third cult, the cult of Starmer, which is by far the one for whom I have the most sympathy, but I'm afraid you are now looking silly. You're not looking completely cultish, but you are now looking very silly. To claim that this is somehow undeserved or unfair or not a consequence of Keir Starmer's own conduct, own appointments, own actions, own record, own CV, is now looking close to cultish. So those are the three cults. The cult of three. And today's phoning really is about the rest of us. It's about everybody else. It's about people who are capable of changing their mind, which is, of course, something that cult members are not capable of doing. It's about people who are capable of free and interesting thought, which is, of course, something that cult members are. You see how unfair this is on the Starmer cultists? Because they're nice people. They're nice people who just haven't yet let go of hope. They haven't yet go of the idea that because he represented something very different to what we'd endured over the past 10 years, he must be the right guy, the good guy. He's all of those things. He's a good guy. He's not the right guy. And I know it's a little bit unfair to lump you in with the cults of Johnson and Corbyn, but today at least you are looking that detached, perhaps, from observable reality. So for the rest of us who process events and sometimes reluctantly arrive at conclusions we don't want to arrive at, today is a day for looking at how Keir Starmer has managed to mess it up so badly. With that list, and I'll read it later, of all the things that he's got right, but the list of all the things that he's got wrong. And rather than necessarily even dedicate too much time to cataloguing them, I want to look at what underpins it. There's a line that I read out a moment ago that one of the people, briefing journalists, has shared and has claimed that he was a pescatarian forced to eat dog food. So the idea is that there were values, there was such a thing as Starmerism, but he fell for, or he bought into, Morgan McSweeney's idea that they had to behave in the way that they've behaved since they got into Downing Street. And that is probably best understood through the lens of that loveless landslide. It's not an impossible position in which to find yourself in, but it's a curiously unenviable position to have both an enormous majority in Parliament and a rather small majority across the country, constituency-wise, because it means that your landslide is loveless and your majority is wide but shallow. And that leaves you having, or that left this lot, believing that they had to try to please all of the people all of the time. And the people that they chose to please least were arguably the people in the cult of Starmer. If you think about it, the people who, like me, were deeply disturbed and remain deeply disturbed by some of the rhetoric that Shabana Mahmood deploys about immigration, and of course by some of the Reform UK adjacent rhetoric that even Keir Starmer has found himself deploying at the time, buying into the idea that people attracted to a massive racist aren't necessarily racist themselves and have legitimate concerns about British values. I don't know. I mean, if it proved like a brilliant political move, you'd have to sit there, hold your nose and say, well done. But it didn't, and it isn't, and I don't think it will. So I think what we have been watching here is actually very, very different from what's gone before, but similar to it in one simple and singular way. What we've seen, and this is what the phone-in is going to hinge upon, what we've seen is Keir Starmer, to everybody's surprise, perhaps, except, of course, the two main cultists, what we've seen is Keir Starmer demonstrate that he's not very good at being Prime Minister. And I think that's really sad. And I say it with great reluctance, and I wish he was better. And I wish I didn't think that it is now close to impossible that he will prove to be, that miraculous gear will be discovered. Keir Starmer has demonstrated over the course of the last 18 months or so that he's just not very good at being Prime Minister. And I could forgive that on the grounds that he is the doughtiest bulwark that we have against the whatever you want to call it, the idiocy, the fascist adjacent, the reality denying alternatives that we've seen in full flow over the last 10 years. We have the four donkeys of the apocalypse: Brexit, Boris Johnson, Liz Truss, and austerity, and the absolute carnage they've wreaked on our country. You now have some of the biggest cheerleaders of those four donkeys claiming that they're the people to clean up the mess left behind by the four donkeys of the apocalypse. And the one thing he could do that would allow me to forgive the not being very good at this was the ending the chaos. It was the very simple promise that the stench of hypocrisy and scandal would be removed forever. For me, the stench of hypocrisy and scandal could overcome almost everything else. If you could remove that, then the whiff of incompetence would, at least for now, be forgivable. The whiff of an ideological vacuum, a whiff that is fast becoming an odour, would be forgivable. Because if you had, and I say this as someone who sometimes teases you with the word patriotic, but I really mean it. I hate, imagine being an American now and caring about decency or democracy, transparency, honesty or goodness. It must be absolutely horrible. You can almost understand why so many people have ended up in complete denial about what's going on over there. But if you do love your country, which is a weird thing to do, right? Because if you'd been born somewhere else, you'd probably love that place just as much as you love this place. But you do. I don't know whether we're raised that way. I don't know whether it's nature or nurture. But if you love the people in your country, that's the difference, isn't it, between someone hanging tatty flags on roundabouts and someone who's truly patriotic. You want the best for your neighbours, the very best for your neighbours. Then you can't, in all honesty, want the four donkeys of the apocalypse to have another run around the track of British politics. Having delivered disaster after disaster after disaster after disaster, they're now queuing up to have another go. And it's heartbreaking to see if you love this country. It's also heartbreaking to see some of your neighbours, not literally, I should stress, in my case, but to see some of your metaphorical neighbours falling for it again. Falling for the fifth, the biggest donkey of all, Nigel Farage. And that's the problem, is that Starmer was supposed to stand against that, but crucially to stand against what Boris Johnson emblemised, distilled down to its very essence and represented, which was contempt for people, for rules, and for decency. Absolute contempt for people, for rules, and for decency. And that's why the Peter Mandelson story is so huge. Because Peter Mandelson is of the same ilk. He has contempt for people, for rules, and for decency. You cannot be friends with Jeffrey Epstein after he's been jailed for soliciting a child for prostitution, unless you have contempt for people, in this case, that child and all women and girls in Jeffrey Epstein's orbit. You have contempt for rules because he broke them and you stayed mates. And you have contempt for decency because if there is anything upon which everybody of all political hues could agree, it is that Jeffrey Epstein represented indecency. So the one thing
that the former director of public prosecutions, the one thing that a man with a long and proud history of representing women's interests, of passionately opposing violence against women and girls, of going after whatever you may have read online or heard from your favourite Facebook Republican, going after grooming gangs and child sex abusers of every ethnicity and every background in this country, the one thing you thought that man would do was stop that very particular rot. That very particular rot. And he didn't. And it doesn't matter, I'm afraid, that lots of people praised the appointment to the rafters at the time. It doesn't matter that everybody thought it was a stroke of genius to set a thief, to catch a thief, to send a snake, to seduce a snake. It doesn't matter. Because when the one thing that we hoped he would most do, he failed to do on such an extraordinary scale. And it's not your job to notice at the time, actually. It's my job, and I failed, and I'm sorry. But it's not your job to notice at the time that that was a hideous appointment, whatever the thinking behind it may be. It's evidence, once again, of how Donald Trump has boiled all our brains. You sit here saying, well, maybe a bloke who stayed friends with a paedophile would be the perfect bloke to operate in the White House. And it's two things at the same time. It's true that a bloke who stayed friends with a paedophile would be the perfect bloke to represent our interests in Donald Trump's White House. But it's also disgusting. And given that choice, facing that fork in the road, I think I've got this right, and if I haven't, you'll tell me. Given that fork in the road, the one thing we thought we could rely on Keir Starmer to do would be to go down the road marked decency, not to go around the road marked disgusting. Even if it was true that sending a man who stayed friends with a paedophile to represent us in Donald Trump's White House would be a brilliant move, until it wasn't, it was too disgusting to do, and he did it. And that's why I can't, I'm afraid, get past the conclusion that Keir Starmer is in all of this trouble today because he's not very good at being Prime Minister. The number you need is 03456060973. I suppose I could phrase the question thus: why is Keir Starmer in so much trouble today? In fact, I will phrase the question like that. Give me a call now and tell me why you think Keir Starmer is in so much trouble today. I think we started the show on Friday with a cultist, and it's not illuminating, or I mean, it can be fun to hear people soil themselves on the radio. But, I mean, if you're coming to this as a fully paid-up member of the Boris Johnson fan club, the Jeremy Corbyn fan club, or the Keir Starmer, if you're denying that he's in trouble or should be in trouble, I don't know that you've got... I don't know. I mean, I suppose I can ask you to prove me wrong by coming to the table with something cogent and interesting to say, but generally, it's people who, like me, feel very disappointed about what's happened, but recognise that the blame lies first, last and always with Keir Starmer. Don't we all now have to stop arguing or pretending that this is anything other than a question of competence? And the proof of the pudding lies in the appointment of Peter Mandelson, because everything else was forgivable, but not stopping the stench of corruption, moral corruption and cronyism, not excising the last lingering aromas of Boris Johnson's contempt for morality from the corridors of power, not doing that is the point I can't get past. Hit the numbers now, you will get through. Tell me why I should try harder. Because I'd like to. But right now I can't. And let's try and keep the cults to a minimum today, shall we? So if you're feeling a bit cultish, send me a text. 03456060973 is the number you need. It can be quite liberating. It's a bit like when you finally accept that Donald Trump is a fascist, is an utterly morally corrupt fascist, and you stop clinging on to the hope that he'll prove not to be. Similarly liberating to arrive at the conclusion that Keir Starmer is just rubbish at being Prime Minister. You let go of the hope, and I haven't fully done that yet, like I have with the hope that Donald Trump will turn out not to be all the things he so clearly is. But there we are, right? That's what's going on. Tell me I'm wrong, but also, of course, tell me I'm right on 03456060973.
LBC. This year, LBC joins Vauxhall
proud partner of Team GB in supporting our extraordinary athletes at the Milano Cortina 2026 Olympic Winter Games.
I'm Matt Weston, representing Team GB in the sports skeleton in Milano Cortina 2026. Been a bit of a crazy journey since my last Olympics in Beijing 2022. I've had a pretty successful few years, two-time world champion and three-time Crystal Globe. It's been pretty successful. Can't wait to go back to Milan and represent GB on the highest stage possible.
For your chance to win £1,000 thanks to Vauxhall, head to lbc.co.uk.
Thanks for the key deliverables, David. Now, who'd like to
stay out all night? Yahoo!
That's brilliant. So, okay, sales targets. Are we hitting
the dance floor?
There's more than one you, and with Specsavers 2 for 1, you can choose glasses for at least two yous. From £70 with standard single-vision lenses.
Nice move, David!
Book an appointment at specsavers.co.uk. Conditions apply.
The Philly cheesesteak is back at McDonald's, and it's still intensely cheesy. Imagine the cheesiest thing ever. Now cover it in cheese. Add two beef patties, cheddar cheese sauce, crispy onions, and even more cheese. The Philly cheesesteak. Did we mention it's cheesy? Available until the 16th of March 2026 from 11 a.m. Fees apply to delivery orders. Price and participation may vary, subject to availability.
Things are really heating up in the country's smallest house.
Dad!
Squealed Mia Mouse.
We could save around £100 by setting the boiler flow temperature to 60 degrees.
And turning radiators down in rooms we don't use.
Interrupted Mo.
Yes, Mo.
Turn them down, not off, said Mia.
Plus finding and blocking drafts,
said Mo.
Should save enough to increase our allowance?
A little saves a lot. You could save around £100 a year off your energy bills with three tips at gov.uk/cleanenergy.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
25 minutes after 10. I quite like that, actually, that parallel. I did. It is oddly liberating. If you haven't done it yet, you'll have to take my word for it, to stop hoping that Donald Trump would turn out not to be disgusting, or that his disgustingness would somehow be ameliorated or alleviated. And when you accept that he is all of those things, you know, these are the warnings that history has given us, and you accept you're witnessing it now in real time. They're building concentration camps. They're killing their own citizens. They're shutting down dissent. They're probably going to corrupt the next election. They're still lying about the 2021. It's all there. I mean, it's textbook stuff. Let go of the hope. And oddly, that will set you free. And I wonder whether the same is in a completely different way true of Starmer. Let go of the hope that he's going to turn it round, that he's going to prove you wrong, that he's going to defy his critics, and just accept he's not very good at this. And the interests of the country, never mind the Labour Party, are probably best served by a changing of the guard. Carol is in Enfield. Carol, what would you like to say?
Oh, hi there. I think he's responsible for helping reform gain traction. I also think that there's nothing decent about misleading voters to vote for him. And I think we're all suffering from amnesia. First of all, he flirted with all wings of the party and said lots of things that appealed to them in order for him to get voted in.
That's what politicians always do. That they say things that will get them voted in. Can you think of a politician who deliberately said things that he didn't think or she didn't think that would get them votes?
But this is Labour.
Can you think of a Labour politician who never said things that he hoped would get them votes?
If you look at what he has said and how he's retracted.
Yes, I do it every day. It's my job.
So he kept the two-child. I think the rot set in earlier, and I think the Mandelson thing is what's going to get rid of him. Now, he kept the two-child benefit cap, and he said country before party, but when those people voted for country...
And then he came into power and discovered the fiscal black hole that has typified almost all of their policy announcements subsequently.
He also said that he was going to ask those with the broadest shoulders to help a little bit,
so that...
And he stuck VAT on school fees, and he went after farmers' inheritance tax, and then he undid that. So, I appreciate that you thought he was abandoned from the start, but I would never dream of accusing you of cultishness. But in the context of simple competence, making promises he didn't keep, or saying things in the hope of getting votes, I'm afraid, puts you in an entry-level position in the cult of Corbyn, because that's what politicians do, unless they don't care about winning power, which is fine. But the idea that the current travails are part of a pattern is just not true. The pattern is that he's not very good at things. It's not that he's corrupt or dishonest or any of those things. He's just not very good at it. And I don't see how he gets past that. And I don't actually see how you disprove it. 0345 6060 973 is the number you need. The time is approaching 10:30. A couple of texts that really distill things down to brass tacks. I'm perplexed at this situation. Everyone on the right has called for Starmer to resign, from literally Glasses Gate in the very first months, and anyone Corbyn adjacent has been the same. Everyone in the middle is just stunned at why we find ourselves in such a stupid situation. Getting rid of him would be silly. I think he will survive. I'm happy to be persuaded that I'm wrong, and it wouldn't be the first time you've done so. I don't think I've persuaded you yet. And this, I love you, James, but I hope if you get your way with Starmer, you'll be happy. This is, again, what I mean by saying The facts are what we're discussing today, not the feelings. I found myself becoming increasingly frustrated with your outlook on it all. Imagine looking at the Peter Mandelson story and getting frustrated with me. That is, again, not necessarily the correct approach to take to things. For years, we've said that we've had enough of all politicians being the same and in it for themselves. Yes, and cronyistic and corrupt, and appointing people who were amoral, or people achieving power who were amoral. And Starmer's done it. Finally, we get one that isn't and is decent, and you aren't happy. You say consistently that he's been a disaster, but then you read out a text with all his achievements. Starmer has all... Well, I'm afraid the problem with that list is that anyone could have done it. And the problem with mistakes, like the ones that Starmer has made and keeps making, is that it often looks as if only he could have made them. That's the problem. But again, prove me wrong on 0345 6060 973. It's 10:30, and Dominic Ellis has your headlines.
Prince and Princess of Wales say they're deeply concerned by the continued revelations from the Jeffrey Epstein files. The latest allegations suggest that Andrew Mountbatten Windsor shared confidential information with Epstein when he was UK trade envoy. A government minister has rejected claims that Sir Keir Starmer's not taking responsibility for the Lord Mandelson scandal. Baroness Smith has told LBC the Prime Minister is determined to overhaul the vetting system for senior appointments. And the Foreign Secretary, Yvette Cooper, says the government will rapidly engage with China on the case of Jimmy Lai. The Hong Kong media tycoon and pro-democracy campaigner has been sentenced to 20 years in prison. LBC weather, cloudy with outbreaks of rain to start. Heavy rain will push into the southwest by the afternoon. A high of 11 degrees.
This is LBC.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
Across the country, thousands of drivers are feeling electric about switching to an EV. And here's why. They can go from London to Sheffield on a single charge that could cost around a fiver. They're ecstatic about that and the exhilarating feeling behind the wheel. Plus, with charging made simple at home, they're always ready for the drive ahead. I can see why they're into it. Switch to an EV and get that electric feeling. Costs and range dependent on tariffs, model and driving habits. For full details, visit gov.uk/clean energy.
At Ocado, you'll save 25% on your first shop and get free delivery. Which means if you were to buy a four-cheese pizza, you'd basically be getting one of the cheeses for free. Save and splurge at Ocado, the online supermarket. Geographical and other restrictions. Minimum spend £60 and charges apply. New customers only. Maximum saving £20 terms at ocado.com.
Selling your car can be super simple. If you choose We Buy Any Car. Now in their 20th year, they're on average 11 minutes away. So help is never far. If only they could make finding a good driving song simpler. No. No. Oh, definitely not. We Buy Any Car. Selling made simple. To sell your car today, enter your reg number now at webuyanycar.com.
Shine Night Walk London is a 10K, half marathon or full marathon supported walk around the city at night on the 19th of September to raise vital money for Cancer Research UK. It's also
everyone walking with all their colours, twinkling away.
You can actually see how nice London is. And London is different at night time.
Celebration of life, and it gives hope.
Step towards a brighter future at shinewalk.org today to get 30% off your entry. Together, we are beating cancer. T's and C's apply.
And when teams feel supported, they can achieve anything.
Sorry, just had even more of my teamer off ill.
Have you tried Benenden Health? It's easy to set up. They've got a GP helpline you can book 24/7.
Where were we?
A coffee break, hopefully.
Press play on your people's health with a wide range of healthcare services for less than £16 per employee per month. Search Benenden for Business. Fee reviewed periodically. T's and C's apply. Qualifying periods apply for some services. UK only. Visit benenden.co.uk.
James O'Brien on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
10:34 is the time. If you missed the introduction this morning, you may not appreciate Jimmy's wit here. It's a good job Jeremy Hunt is not in any of these cults, James. You can say that again, Jimmy. And this from Jim. Honestly, you wait ages for one Jim to come along and then you get two in the space of 2 minutes. This is from Jim, who's in Whitehaven. Well done, lad, he begins, before adding, I'm 57. Mate, you're 3 years older than me. You can't call me... Anyway, I could not believe Mandelson was appointed. I'm not surprised this mess is happening, but the most scary thing is that regardless of left or right, it seems the UK cannot form a government that lasts a single term. Hence, reform waiting in the wings. It's terrifying. It is really, if you look at what's happening in the United States, currently led by the bravest man Nigel Farage has ever met, as opposed to the politician in the world he admires most, who's currently sitting in the Kremlin, then, yeah, I mean, it is another mark of the madness that we are still suffering from. But what was Starmer supposed to do? Competence and anti-corruption. The end of chaos. What has this week been typified by? Chaos. And that is the point at which I think you have to conclude he's not very good at being Prime Minister. He's a good man, but do you know what he believes in? You can send me the list of all the things that the government has achieved and fail completely to explain to me why he was somehow instrumental in that happening, and any other leader wouldn't have been able to deliver these positives without all of the negatives. And I am not, for the avoidance of doubt, I'm not yet fully unclenched. My fists are still holding on to the idea that he will prove to be better. And that's why, I don't know, I mean, you can make inappropriate jokes about General Galtieri invading the Falkland Islands. That level of event, it looks to me today, is all that can save him. But I would still like to be wrong. So I'm not fully liberated from this. I'd still like to be wrong. But I increasingly don't think that I am. Mikey's in Hackney. Mikey, what would you like to say?
Hi, James. Thanks for having me on. So, forgive me if I'm speaking quickly because I've got a few points I'd love to get out. But anyway,
people listening back on Rewind Live Radio can, of course, slow you down anyway.
Slow it down, great. So basically, to answer your question, why is Keir Starmer in trouble? I would argue that he is only in trouble at risk of losing his job because he is the one caught holding the bag when the music stops. Mm. It has nothing to do with what he knew or what he didn't know or how decent he apparently is or whatever. So the first thing I would use to justify that position is that, firstly, it's worth pointing out that the Mandelson scandal occurred not as a result of any fearless journalism speaking truth to power, but instead it happened in spite of that.
Yes.
I suspect most people in the media class would prefer that this information had stayed hidden, because especially the ones that want the Starmer project to succeed. I can explain why that I think that is.
Go on then.
Okay.
Just for the avoidance of doubt, before I indulge my raised heckles, there's not really any such thing as the media class.
What does that mean?
Well, I mean, you're speaking as if they're a homogenous grouping.
Well, I mean, not entirely homogenous, but there's a reason that so many people...
I despise what a lot of people in my profession do, and they despise my anti-fascism and my anti-racism because they're fascists and racists. So the idea that we're all part of the same club, it just raises my heckle slightly. It's a phrase I think demonstrates a kind of lack of thought, but that may be me being unfair, as you're about to prove with your analysis.
Possibly. I mean, I don't think it's down on political lines, as you quite rightly point out. I think it's speaking to something, it's speaking to class, which is a different thing. But I would argue that the political and media class are far too close to each other, and everyone...
I've written a book about this. Let's just move it along to... Let's move it along to what's going on today, shall we?
Okay, so... Well, Everyone knew that Peter Madison is a. I'm explaining why Keir Starmer's been caught holding the bag, even though, like, I don't think he's uniquely a bad person. Well, I do actually, but like, I don't think it matters. I don't think it matters at all.
But he appointed Mandelson. He didn't inherit him. Ending up with the bag in your hand is something that you have no control over. He packed the bag, mate.
Well, no, exactly. I mean, I don't make any excuses for them. I think he should resign, really. But then again, I'm currently a member of the Greens, and I think it's better for the Greens that he stays
If someone had said to you in a sentence, what's your point? What do you think you would have said?
Well, I actually had an example of why, a very good example of why the media class or the media covers for itself and for people who are powerful, and one that's relative to...
If I ever hold that phone in, I'd really look forward to your contribution, but unfortunately that's not the phone in that I'm having today. So if I said to you in a sentence, in answer to the question of are we simply looking at a competence question with Starmer and the failure to stop the chaos, what was it that you rang in to say? Because that's the phone in everyone else is having.
Well, you did. You originally asked, why is he in trouble? And I've explained to you that he is in trouble today. Yeah.
With reference to the Mandelson scandal. And it's about the proximity of the political class to the media class, is it?
Well, yes.
There you go. That's on the list. Seb's in Camden. Seb, what would you like to say?
Hi, James. How are you doing? You okay?
I think I am, mate. I'm overcome by cultishness this morning. What would you like to say?
Well, for me, I think, similar to you, I was a really big Keir Starmer fan at the start.
I was a really big Keir Starmer fan.
He was
the pot into which we had to put all our
eggs,
wasn't
he?
Anyway, go on.
And so it was sort of like there's a lot of hope around his morality.
Yes.
And, you know, he was signifying a lot of stuff. You know, he was going against his own people on a very moral standpoint, like Angela Rayner's gone when her tax affairs weren't in order.
Yes.
Rachel Reeves was. And so it was like, oh, this is looking good. But that stuff sort of doesn't really
Louise
matter.
Hay,
on day
every time there was a perception of wrongdoing, sometimes it took a little bit longer than might have been ideal. But it took a heck of a lot less time than it has under any other prime minister in living memory. You put
and
a foot
was,
out of line, you were
really
toast.
Good. And that was all really good. And so you think, okay, that stuff, you know, that looks really good, cool. But then when there's sort of racist marches going through London, I was on the anti-racist march, I think, right, let's see that morality in action.
Yeah.
Come on. And then it didn't come.
And you had Labour ministers coming out talking about how people dancing to the tune of a serial criminal and avowed racist were somehow expressing legitimate concerns. And of course, defending ultimately, I know the Labour Party never did this, but the people on that march did, human beings calling for other human beings to be burnt to death in their bed.
And you just felt, you were just slowly over time, the disappointment set in and you just slowly went, where is it that when it really matters? But I think I still kind of cling on to it in the same way you do a little bit because, you know, if you went out for a meal, I suppose, and someone said the chef's pretty rubbish, you'd say, okay, but I'd rather have that than the chef who's literally trying to poison me.
Just put that on the election leaflets. At least he's not poisoning anybody. So I like this analysis because it's incremental, isn't it? And you brought in things that I hadn't brought in. I mentioned some of the rhetoric that appeared to be a bit UKIP adjacent, but the idea that is also part of the failure to keep those two central promises. We'll get rid of the corruption or the perceived corruption, the perceived chaos, and we will be competent. The three C's, actually. We've already had three cults. So corruption, chaos, competence. And that rhetoric, that weird, almost pandering to the racist vote because they're so frightened of where Farage sits in the opinion polls, is the polar opposite of what anyone who felt enthusiasm for Keir Starmer was expecting him to do.
Yeah, exactly. It was very much sort of like, I'm going to take the really moral stance, but on my own side and sort of show my kind of big moral, you know, standpoint brutishness on people that I already feel like are in my camp. But if there's a chance of winning votes against people who I really should be standing up against, I'll sort of let it slide.
And if we had to distill it down into a single sentence, it would, for me, I think, be that I don't know what he believes in.
Nah, I think it's exactly right. That is exactly right.
Does that matter? It does matter. It must.
It does a lot.
Why does it matter, Seb?
Well, you know, you don't get out of bed in the morning unless you're really kind of like, yeah, I'm going out to bat for something in particular. And really, he was never the someone you'd go and follow into battle. But if he kind of had something, then you may be able to do it. But he's kind of neither the someone or the something.
Yeah, and then the competence kicks in, because if he's going to be managerial, if he's going to focus on process, if he's going to take each task as it comes and leave ideology at the door, then you have to be good at it.
Exactly.
And he hasn't done that either. And you, speaking of battle, Seb, I'm pretty sure it was Napoleon, although it could be one of those quotes that everybody uses without ever checking, who said you need lucky generals. And he certainly isn't that. Neither has he had particularly lucky generals, with the possible exception of Wes Streeting. Although Wes Streeting has had junior doctor strikes galore on his watch and another one on the way, despite making a very generous accepted offer at the very beginning of his tenure in the health service. But he ain't no lucky general, Keir Starmer, is he, by any stretch of the imagination? It is coming up to 10:45. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC, where we're overcome with C words today, but don't worry, not that one. The cult of Boris Johnson, led somewhat improbably by Richard Madeley, arguing at the weekend that the Peter Mandelson scandal somehow proves that sending Jacob Rees-Mogg to Balmoral to lie to the Queen, that unlawfully proroguing Parliament, that trying to rip up the rulebook to protect your crony Owen Paterson's job after he broke parliamentary ethical standards, after having two ethics advisers resign in disgust at your own absence of ethics, all of that was very unfair. He was very unfairly treated, because Starmer's clearly the real wrong'un. We got the cult of Corbyn, who are under the impression that politicians should never say anything in pursuit of votes and should only ever publicly state things that they will absolutely be able to deliver 100% when they arrive in power. And then, sadly, you've also got the cult of Starmer, possibly a bit underrepresented so far today, but the idea that all of this is unfair and he doesn't deserve any of the ordure in which he finds himself currently covered. For everybody else, I think it is just something that makes an increasing amount of sense and is almost entirely self-inflicted, almost entirely. And look, I'm not going to lie to you. Apart from the ludicrous bias of right-wing media, I don't know which bits I'd chalk up as not being self-inflicted. And everybody gets the ludicrous bias of right-wing media. Everyone remembers Ed Miliband eating a bacon sandwich. What you don't remember is Ed Miliband's war hero father. I'm going to say this again because we forget sometimes. Ed Miliband's war hero, dead war hero father, Ralph Miliband, described in the pages of Paul Dacre's Daily Mail, with the likes of Dick Littlejohn sitting alongside chuckling, as the man who hated Britain. Your dead war hero dad, described as the man who hated Britain. So no Labour leader is uniquely targeted by right-wing media. They are a bent and corrupt cabal of wealth facilitators and corruption apologists. But if you're going to go after someone's dead dad who actually fought in the war, then, I mean, you're pretty close to scum, right? So Starmer doesn't get particular abuse or get a free pass for what he endures from the right-wing media, because they all endure it. I mean, Corbyn endured it as well. Let's not make any bones about it. So that's not it. So what is not self-inflicted among the problems and the travails that he finds himself in? It's 10:46.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC. It is completely logical for the Labour membership, the unions, and to an extent, the Labour Parliamentary Party, to install Angela Rayner. If you vote for a left-wing government, you want left-wing things. Wealth taxes, high public spending, unions promoted, day one rights for workers, etc., etc. You want those things. That's what you voted for. Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
The Thames Link train is a place where you can have more me time. A chance to recharge yourself and your phone. To stretch out, sit back, and when you hear "all change, please," you'll know you already have. Go with your flow with great deals at thameslinkrailway.com. Terms apply.
It took me less than 30 seconds to request my repeat prescription on the NHS app.
That's quicker than making this brew.
And I save time by not ringing the GP practice.
When?
Plus, with notifications turned on, I know as soon as I get a new message.
Big win.
So there's more time for this tea break.
So did you go to that restaurant?
I did.
That's
so
good. We're delivering an NHS fit for the future. Request repeat prescriptions and turn on notifications to never miss a message.
Tap the NHS app.
And when teams feel supported, they can achieve anything.
Sorry, just that even more of my team are off ill.
Have you tried Benenden Health? It's easy to set up. They've got a GP helpline you can book 24/7.
Where were we?
A coffee break, hopefully.
Press play on your people's health with a wide range of healthcare services for less than £16 per employee per month. Search Benenden for Business. Fee review periodically. T's and C's apply. Qualifying periods apply for some services. UK only. Visit benenden.co.uk.
Shine Night Walk London is a 10k, half marathon or full marathon supported walk around the city at night on the 19th of September to raise vital money for Cancer Research UK. It's also...
everyone walking with all their colours, twinkling away.
We can actually see how nice London is. And London is different at night time.
Celebration of life, and it gives hope.
Step towards a brighter future at shinewalk.org today to get 30% off your entry. Together, we are beating cancer. T's and C's apply.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
You're really building that business, Josh. That's because you chose to bank with Virgin Money, earning cash back on your supplies, turning expenses into rewards on everything from Sanders to skip hire. He came, he soared, he conquered. Open Virgin Money's M account for business now. UK excludes NI, Channel Islands and Isle of Man. 18 plus. Terms and exclusions apply. Cashback rate of 0.25% backed by the current account switch service. Virgin Money is a trading name of Clydesdale Bank PLC.
This is LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
It's 10 minutes to 11. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. I don't know why. I think it's because of where I grew up. And there is extraordinary flood-related news from where I grew up, particularly a riverside, two riversides, in fact, because rivers have two sides. That's not an opinion, that's counting, which has flooded for all of my life. I can never remember it not flooding, and I don't think it's flooding in the current rainfall. Everywhere else is flooding, but they've actually got something right just up the road from where I grew up. And I'd probably get onto that a little later in the programme. I do find myself also thinking that if London was underwater, if London was Somerset, do you know, they haven't had any sunshine in Aberdeen since January the 25th, was it? Or the 28th? Anyway, a long time. Not a single second. Like, no registered. The clouds have not parted in Aberdeen since last month. About a week into last month, a week before the end of last month. But I think that if London was underwater, we'd be talking about nothing else. I think this every time there's floods. And you don't really notice it unless you're in the media. Because you watch local news. The national news tends not to focus as heavily on it as it would do if it was happening in London. Most outlets don't even have offices in some regions now. But anyway, we may get onto that. Because you know what? Do you know, let's test how committed a listener to this programme you are. What is the thing that interests me most when the country starts flooding? Answers on a postcard, please, to 0345 6060973. 10:51 is the time. The thing with Keir Starmer is that it pains us all to say it, but he just isn't very good at this job. He's had loads of jobs in his life that he was very good at. This ain't one of them. I've had jobs in my life that I wasn't very good at. Happily, this ain't one of them. But I have. And it's just the way it goes. And you don't know till you get there. You might look like... how many times has it happened to you? I don't know if you're a hirer. You actually hire people. I was thinking about this the other day in the context of politics. Not a defence of cronyism by any stretch of the imagination. But if you put me in charge of everything now, I would find it very hard not to rely upon some personal connections that I already had. I'd think, oh, I tell you, who'd be able to sort that out. I tell you, I'd get Will Guyot in charge of something immediately. Do you see what I mean? And then you are a tech expert, and you'd be like, how did Will Guyot get that job? I should have got that job. That job has got my name written all over it. But I know Will Guyot, and I trust him, and I like him, and I know he's good at stuff, so I'd hire... do you see what I mean? But how many times have you hired someone, or had someone hired alongside you, and you've thought to yourself, I shouldn't have given him the job in the first place. So you never know until you're in the zone. That's why recruitment consultants get paid the big bucks. Because it's on them. And it turns out he just wasn't very good at being Prime Minister. And I don't know why. Maybe I should ask you that question. Why do you think Keir Starmer wasn't a very good Prime Minister? So not in terms of the events that have unfolded, but in terms of the bedrock to those events, the context in which the bad stuff has happened, is him not being very... Why do you think Keir Starmer has proved to be not very good at being Prime Minister? Tony's in Hampton Court. Tony, what would you like to say?
Hi, James.
Hello, Tony.
I think you said something a little while ago just before the news about possibly this whole thing is a little bit unfair on him. And I tend to agree with that. I think it would have been very difficult for anybody in the last, you know, 18 months or so, to have proved that they are a good Prime Minister. I think many of the things that Keir Starmer is trying to do are things that will not immediately benefit anybody in the very short term. So he's not got this sort of hinterland of, you know, he's not got this thing of people immediately feeling better. I think a lot of the stuff is longer term. And I think circumstances have been such that it's been very easy to sort of criticise him at every turn because he's been doing difficult things.
He's not been doing them very well. I mean, let's for the avoidance of doubt and in the interest of fairness and balance, I think he's been first class on the international stage. I think he's been a world leader of uncommon clarity and impact. And that was desperately needed after Boris Johnson tore up all our credit in almost every country on the planet. And so, you know, he is good at things. But I see that performance in contrast to his domestic performance.
And I'm not suggesting that there isn't a contrast between what has gone on the international stage and what has gone on domestically. I think the point I'm making is it's possibly a little bit unfair to suggest that the domestic stuff is his fault. I mean,
and it is though, because here's the thing: I can't remember who it was, but I used to laugh and laugh and laugh because he seemed to be on the hook every time there was a U-turn under Johnson, and he'd be in the Sky News studio defending it passionately. It was probably honest Bob Jenrick actually. And then he'd be in the car back to base and it would come out over the radio that the thing he's just been passionately defending has been abandoned. And Starmer's done that to all of his key lieutenants, mate. And that's on him.
Yeah, I mean, I do.
Oh, you're clinging, aren't you?
Slightly. I mean, I do think there is a difference.
I was clinging a couple of weeks ago, and I'm barely clinging now. Fingernails for me, Tony, at the moment. Fingernails.
And I'm there as well. It's just I'm also looking at the other side of it, which is, well, if not Starmer, who?
Yeah, that's a different question.
I know that's a different question.
It's not time for that phone in yet.
It isn't time for that phone in, but actually, when the obvious answer to that is nobody, then it's maybe time to think, well, that's a phone-in that we...
This is very meta now because we're analysing the phone-in that we're not having through the lens of another phone-in that we're not having, because the only point at which that becomes pertinent is if we were doing should Starmer go now. And then you can say, no, he shouldn't, because there's no one to replace him. And that would be another phone in, which would be who should replace him. But we're not doing that today.
I completely agree with that.
Yeah.
I mean, you made a comment about signposts earlier on, I think, early in the show, that I thought was quite a good signpost, and he didn't see the sort of disgusting on the signpost.
Yeah. Thought it didn't matter enough. And that's the bit I find it really hard to get past.
Well... this was a massive decision. The national interest was served by having an ambassador in the United States who could deal with Trump, who, you know, many people would put in a different category of disgustingness, even from Peter Mandelson.
Yes, of course. Well, everybody honest would do that.
Yeah. And I again wonder, you know, did he see public interest on that signpost?
This is like, don't know which one of us is Kate Winslet and which one of us is Leonardo DiCaprio, but I kind of, it's part of me that wants to climb on your door, Tony.
There's part of me that wants to float away with you on this. On was it a door that she was on at the end of Titanic?
Yeah,
spoiler alert.
It was a cabin. It was a door.
Spoiler alert. The ship sinks. Oh, that hasn't ruined anybody's enjoyment of the film in the future. But I kind of think there is an argument there for saying this. I mean, we did it last week, to be fair. We did the conversation about how everyone praised him and it was probably the right thing to do. And I can't help seeing it as, you know, Boris Johnson didn't go because he gave a job to a bloke who was facing myriad sex abuse allegations or inappropriate sexual behaviour allegations. He went because of the accumulation of badness. And Starmer is on the ropes, not just because of Mandelson, but that's the biggest thing by far, but an accumulation of concepts and perspectives. And I don't know that I can climb onto the door with you, much as I would like to, Tony. It's
I'm
a lovely
not so
door.
Sure that the badness of Starmer, I don't think is as sick. I think, you know, he's made decisions which clearly haven't pleased everybody, all of them.
But then he's unmade
them,
you see. So, I mean, we could sit here...
He's
largely unmade. I mean, we could sit here now and go through them all, and you wouldn't be able to argue that that was not, a pattern, and B, a disaster, a succession of really bad things. Not scandals. There's nothing moral here until the Mandelson thing came along. But it's like you've got someone to paint your house, and he's made a bit of a mess of every room except the kitchen. And are you going to let him paint the kitchen, Tony?
If he's made mistakes in the painting of the house and put them right so that actually the finished product that you got when he'd finished painting your bedroom window was actually what you wanted in the first place.
Yeah.
You'd think maybe, actually, I'd rather have had somebody that got it right first time. But actually, if your bedroom window was, you know, 10 stories up round a corner where he'd have to do loads of difficult things with ladders, you might think, in hindsight, nobody could have done a better job than this bloke.
Yeah, that is always the great unknown, or the unknown known. You can't do it. The counterfactual, of course, it's called. I think we'll carry on with this. Well, I'll let you decide, and I'll consult with Eleanor during the break. But the question then becomes, why has it gone so badly for Starmer? What is it about Starmer? Not the media, not the whatever it is, but what is it that explains why it's gone so badly for Starmer? Pippa Crerar of The Guardian, an extremely good journalist, is reporting that Starmer's director of communications has just stepped down. That would be Tim Allen, who I think was very... I think, wasn't he a Mandelson man anyway? Or he was very much... That's a name I've known for a long time. I also have a mate called Tim Allen, so I might be getting confused, but, but I'm pretty sure he was very much a New Labour figure. More on that after this, no doubt.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, the Prince and Princess of Wales say they're deeply concerned by the continued revelations from the Jeffrey Epstein files. William's uncle, Andrew Mountbatten Windsor, has denied allegations over his links to the late sex offender. The latest claims suggest Andrew forwarded confidential information to Epstein when he was the UK's trade envoy. Editor-at-large of the Mail on Sunday, Charlotte Griffith, has told LBC the allegations are serious.
In early December 2010 and in early 2011, he forwarded two emails to Epstein. One said, "Made me think of you," which was an investment opportunity. And the one in December detailed important facts about reconstruction in the Helmand province and obviously was offering Epstein an opportunity to invest in that as well.
Sir Keir Starmer is preparing to address Labour backbenchers later, as some urge him to consider resigning. His Chief of Staff, Morgan McSweeney, quit yesterday, saying that he pushed Lord Mandelson's appointment as US Ambassador. Paul Richards is a former adviser to Labour cabinet ministers in the Blair and Brown governments. He's told LBC he can't see Sir Keir leaving his post anytime soon.
Labour's constitution makes it very hard to get rid of a sitting prime minister. In fact, one MP said to me, if there was a leadership contest, Starmer, of course, would be allowed to stand in it. It would take a member of the Labour Party in Parliament to get 81 of their colleagues to put their name on a ballot, and then that would sort of trigger a contest in which Starmer would probably stand and probably win.
The son of Jimmy Lai says he will now likely die in prison. The pro-democracy campaigner has been sentenced to 20 years in jail in Hong Kong. The British citizen, who's 78, has been found guilty of national security offences, which he's always denied. Russia's intelligence service says the attempted assassination of a top general was ordered by Ukraine. The FSB also claims Polish agents were involved. Vladimir Alexeyev was shot several times in Moscow last week. Ukraine has denied involvement and Poland has not responded. A group of MPs has warned hundreds of thousands of social homes in England are failing to meet basic standards. The report says many residents don't have complaints taken seriously and repairs are slow. The government says it is taking action to improve social housing. And just bring you some breaking news we're hearing. Number 10's Director of Communications, Tim Allen, is to stand down. We'll bring you more on this developing story here on LBC News as we get it. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 13 at 10,356. The pound buys $1.36 and €1.14. LBC weather, cloudy with outbreaks of rain to start the day. Heavy rain will push into the southwest by the late afternoon, a high of 11 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
The Volkswagen Fantabulous, Fandabby-dozy, Fandang-a-ding-dong fortnight is here.
Stop. We've been through this, Harry. It's the Volkswagen Fantastic Fortnight. Much snappier.
Oh, OK. From the 2nd to the 16th of February, the Volkswagen Fantastic Fortnight gives you an extra £1,000 towards your finance deposit on top of existing offers on the Polo, Golf, Tiguan and our all-electric ID 3, 4 and 5 with Solutions PCP 7.9% APR representative. Visit your nearest Volkswagen retailer now. Hurry, offer ends 16th of February. Better?
Perfect.
Indemnities may be required. Volkswagen Financial Services.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Five minutes after 11 is the time. Do you want? Should we do another bit? Do you want to pull a curtain behind? I'll be Toto. No, you be Toto. You be Toto. You pull the curtain. I'll be the old man pulling levers and pressing buttons, pretending to be all powerful. The all powerful Oz. Because I was about to say, is it interesting to you that the Director of Communications has gone to, and he was very much a Mandelson Blair era figure, Tim Allen, the Director of Communications who's just walked the plank. But I do this for a living, so it's really exciting. And then I suddenly realised my job is to make it exciting for you. So it is not my job to sit here and go, oh, flipping out, a bloke you've never heard of has resigned, who cares? My job is to go, no, you need to understand this is a very big deal. Everybody, I think, has had things to say about the qualifications or the handling of the communications coming out of Downing Street. Again, sometimes it can be a little bit ignorant in the nicest sense of the word. Why don't they get the message out more? Well, where are they going to get the message out? Well, you think they're going to get a front page of the Daily Telegraph for renationalising a railway? No, they're not. BBC, arguably, has fallen to the forces of the last 10 years. Not to express any sympathy for some, but by no means all BBC journalists. But if you'd failed to do your job to such a degree that the four donkeys of the apocalypse could overrun the country, that's a failure of journalism on an epic scale. And the biggest bulwark, journalistically speaking, to the forces of idiocy and fascism are the BBC. So if you have failed to give people the information they needed to realise that Brexit was a stupid idea, that Boris Johnson was an absolute clown car of a potential prime minister, that Liz Truss's budget should never have been allowed to see the light of day, and that austerity was a hideous ideological response to the global financial crisis of 2008, built upon the idea that the poorest people in the country have already got too much. Because if you're working for the right-wing media, then that's your job is to pretend otherwise, look the other way, and encourage your readers to get cross about immigrants. But if you're at the BBC, those four things should be written in blood on your gravestone. How the hell did that happen if you were doing your jobs half right?
So maybe they could have done a slightly better job there. But whenever people say to me it's a terrible communications failure, they've got really bad comms, I do actually have enormous sympathy for Downing Street. Where is it, do you think, that they would go to get the, quote, message out there that you feel that needs to have been better advertised? Where are they going to go? So what I would have done, if you're interested, and let's be honest, nobody is, but I'm here now. So I'd have gone huge on socials. I'd have brought in the biggest brains in the business and just absolutely bypassed Fleet Street. I thought Corbyn should have done this as well, and to a certain degree, because of the kind of foot soldiers that he had, he kind of began to, but then they all went mad as well. But you just get everything out on social media. Like, literally, even if it means hiring bot farms to do good work rather than being overcome with bot farms doing bad work. You've got to do something to break the spell that this country is under since Rupert Murdoch bought the Sun. But anyway, that is why this is important, but not necessarily proof that he is responsible for all the perceived communications failure that this government has suffered from. Bring back Alistair Campbell, says Annie. Which is presumably Alistair Campbell texting from a new burner phone. I tell you what I want to do next, and Natasha will talk us through this latest departure from Downing Street in just half a moment. But, you know, I'm fascinated by historians of the future, because in many ways we write history on this programme. I don't mean that in a pompous way, but this is the first draft of history. When we respond to breaking news, it's the first draft of history. And by the time we get to the fifth or sixth draft, you'd hope that people were beginning to get it right. And what will historians of the future say about Starmer? And I know it's still early to be writing epitaphs, but if they were simply looking at the first 18 months of Starmer's premiership, even if it goes on for another 50 years, and they were acknowledging the fact that things went very badly, he appeared to be very ill-suited to the job because... What would you write next? This is a phone-in, by the way, because I didn't make that clear. It's not just me pontificating. Well, it's both, actually. 0345 6060 973. Keir Starmer appeared to be, depending on where we are when historians of the future return their attention to this, it will either be Sir Keir Starmer, an unqualified success as Director of Public Prosecutions, who successfully carried a Ming vase across an ice rink in order to end a stranglehold on power that the Conservatives had enjoyed since 2010. Keir Starmer proved to be a poor Prime Minister because... 0345 6060. Go on, it's a good question, that, isn't it? Yeah, it's the first time for everything. Go on. Keir Starmer proved to be a poor Prime Minister because... What would you put there on that list? 0345 6060 973 is the number that you need. And I mean, I was going to say be kind. I don't mean be kind. You don't have to be kind. But be thoughtful. You know, don't just say because he's a wombat, because you won't get on. Why? Why did Keir Starmer proved to be, to many people's surprise, especially if it's your surprise, he proved to be a poor Prime Minister, an ineffective Prime Minister, because... I want more characteristic than circumstance, but I'll take both. 10 minutes after 11 is the time. As promised, Natasha Clarke is here. Tim Allen. Who was he? Where's he gone?
Who knows where he's gone, James, but he's not working in government anymore. He was the Prime Minister's Director of Communications. He's just in the last few minutes announced that he is going to stand down. A very short statement. I've decided to stand down to allow a new number 10 team to be built. I wish the PM and his team every success. It's his fourth Communications Director, James, in the last 18, 19 months he's been in office. This man, Tim Allen, has only been in post in September. That is an incredibly short amount of time to be heading up that role. And, you know, we've obviously had the quitting of Morgan McSweeney over the weekend. This is probably the second person that many of our listeners probably have never heard of. But the significance of it is absolutely huge. First, you know, to lose your chief of staff and to lose your director of communications, two of the most senior positions in Downing Street in 24 hours, is a big sign that Keir Starmer is not going to last the week, if indeed he lasts at all. And you're talking, you've now just turned your phone into a question about Sir Keir Starmer, yeah. And looking back, I think that's what many people are going to be looking for in the coming days.
It's quite bold. You're putting writing on the wall.
I am putting writing on the wall. It's so hard. I don't like making political predictions, but it is looking more and more likely that Keir Starmer is not going to last the week now.
And how much of this will be on him? I mean, because the thing that is impossible to price is him having had enough and thinking, I can't do anything else now for the good of the party. And in his case, of course, country before party, for the good of the country, I'm going to have to let someone else have a go. I've become a problem that is close to insurmountable.
Yeah, and there's sort of two thoughts I have on that. And firstly is that we obviously don't know what's happening in the Prime Minister's brain. I don't know if you saw the photos of him over the weekend looking incredibly glum when he was at this Arsenal match. That is the sort of pictures of a man who is desperately thinking about considering his own future, if I were to interpret his facial expression.
Yeah, I mean, I used to do this for a living.
He looks
No, I know, but
really
I used to
dejected.
Be given 30 photographs, in one of which someone looked miserable, and that would be the one that I printed and wrote, the misery is etched on Patsy Kensington. Its face as Liam Gallagher staggers back, and in the other 20 pictures she looked great.
True,
but no, you're obviously wrong.
That we can point to, however, is obviously when he lost the Hartlepool by-election back in 2021 and he considered quitting at that point.
That's true.
And his staff had to convince him not to do so. If I were Keir Starmer today, I would be genuinely thinking about whether the end is near for me. However, I think that he is such a man of principle. He is a Rishi Sunak-esque guy in the fact that he believes in duty to the country above all else. Mm. And I don't think he's thinking about his political future. He's thinking about the political future of the country at this moment in time. And I think that he probably knows that there is not a single successor in place to come in and replace him. West Streeting, not ready, tainted by Lord Mandelson and his associations with him, not really loved by the political Labour Party. And Angela Rayner, still facing a tax investigation. To go into a leadership contest now, I think Keir Starmer knows, would be absolute chaotic.
Ed Miliband's odds have come in over the weekend.
Goodness.
Stranger
things have happened.
Is there no chance that Tim Allen has gone because Starmer wants him to?
Of course, there's a potential. Yeah, of course.
He just wants a clean sweep. My information, I can show you the text because my top sources. My information was on Saturday that Morgan and the Cabinet Secretary were going to go this weekend.
Interesting. Well, Cabinet Secretary is another appointment of Sir Keir Starmer. Yeah. Chris Wilmot was somebody that the PM put in place, has generally been perceived as not a fantastic hire. You'll remember just a couple of days ago when we were talking after PMQs about what the Tories were doing to try and force these documents. Now, the Prime Minister's preferred solution was to hand all these documents to the Cabinet Secretary, and MPs went, nah, we don't want that. They went, no, we want MPs to have the decision. We don't want the Cabinet Secretary. So a bit of a symptom that MPs had lost faith in the Cabinet Secretary and in the Prime Minister and the way that he was handling things. So interesting times we live in. But yes, I think it's just like I say, it is another symptom that potentially the decline of Keir Starmer is coming a lot quicker than we think. And it's not hyperbole to sort of see that this, you know, this happened with Boris Johnson, right? It started with a trickle and then suddenly it was a flood. And we are still awaiting whether that's going to happen. And last week it became, I think it was very uncertain about whether that was going to happen, whether cabinet ministers were going to resign. And we still haven't seen any of the cabinet ministers resign. But this is a big, big, big shape up for number 10. Yeah. And it remains to be seen what will happen there.
And this is everything to do with where he was before the Mandelson story broke, actually. Because had he been in fine fettle and in good standing with the party, and even with the country, but especially with the party, parliamentary and national, then it would have been a lot easier to ride this out. But there was a sense of straws and camel's backs, which is where the parallel with Johnson comes from, because the straws on Keir Starmer's camel are as nothing compared to lying to the Queen on lawfully proroguing Parliament, losing two ethics advisers in disgust because of your contempt for ethics, tearing up the rule book on parliamentary standards because Owen Paterson had broken it. I mean, the list, and breaking the law, living at the address that had more breaches of the COVID laws you made than any other address in the country. It's hideously unfair to compare the two in anything, unless you're Richard Madeley, in anything other than the simplest nature of the analogy, which is it's where he was before this story broke that explains the severity of the situation that he finds himself in now.
Yes, and where he was before this scandal erupted was losing political capital with his MPs. They didn't feel like he was talking to them. They didn't feel like he was listening to them. They didn't want to. One told me the other day they were invited to Chequers and they said, no, thanks.
But this is the phone in we're moving into, isn't it? In that he did this idea that people, he just wasn't collegiate. He didn't feel that members of the, I mean, I don't know who can answer this except MPs, really, but the idea that he wasn't there for people.
Mm. And not a very politically astute person. You know, I don't think he really... I remember when I was with him on that NATO trip just about maybe a week before they did the welfare rebellion U-turn, and it didn't feel like he nor his team really grasped just how angry and upset MPs were at the time. It didn't feel like they got quite how upset people were with the way that Number 10 were running the operation then. And then a couple of days later, forced into a really embarrassing U-turn. And it still feels like that with, when you look at Morgan McSweeney over the weekend, and the idea that it took 4 days between him admitting that, yes, I did know about Jeffrey Epstein's admissions, 4 days between that admission and then actually letting him go to be the full man for this. Does that show strength or does that show weakness, that actually it took you 4 days to come around to the idea that this guy, who you knew gave you that information, he was the one that convinced you to hire him in the first place?
Now this was the McSweeney thing, wasn't it? Is that he felt everything would pass. If you just sit it out, it will pass. And he thought this one would as well. And they clearly perhaps concluded that it wasn't going to.
But every MP was saying to me over the weekend, that's sort of when I realised I think he had to go, was yesterday, when MPs after MP were saying the same thing. It's got to be Morgan. He's got to go because we don't trust that the way that he's operating in Number 10 anymore. And once you lose that trust with MPs, that the problem is, James, the road back is so hard from here.
Of course it is. Yeah, that's what I began by asking you about, whether or not ultimately it's going to come down to Starmer's appetite in the short term for this particular fight, which isn't really what he signed up for.
No.
The problem is, it's hard to identify, and this is the phone-in we're about to have, exactly what it was that he did sign up for.
Well, we'll hear from him later today when he addresses MPs, but we should get a sense of him, whether he is up for that fight. Downing Street, a briefing today that he absolutely is. He's going to be setting out this week and today what he's doing and why he's the right man for the job, that he's strengthened all these ministerial appointments, that he cares about standards in public life, and all of the sort of a list of achievements he's got to point to. But I think it will be crucial to hear from the man himself at some point, and I'm sure we will hear from him at some point this week. I was told there was tentative plans for the Prime Minister to do something on Thursday. We'll see if that still happens. It will be crucial to hear from his words. Is he going to come out rolling his sleeves up and fighting, or is he dejected as he was after Hartlepool and sort of starting to think about succession planning?
Self-awareness again, isn't it? As I am not the man, I am not the person to deal with this problem, and it takes quite a lot to realise that he was the right person to carry a Ming vase across an ice rink. He is not the person to get through this particular quagmire of largely self-inflicted but not entirely self-inflicted problems. Natasha, thank you. It's one of those days where I can say that we may well be hearing from you again before 1 o'clock today.
I kind of hope so.
Yeah, well, thank you very much. You'll certainly be popping up on LBC at some point, because we're in one of those moments where there are many, many moving parts and nobody knows which bit is going to break next. If you're just joining us, the Director of Communications at Downing Street, a huge job. Previous incumbents, of course, include the likes of Alistair Campbell. Has walked the plank, whether or not he was pushed, or whether or not, is it a rat leaving a sinking ship, or is it a captain recalibrating the crew? We don't currently know. 52-48, I'd say, probably. But more of your thoughts on why Sir Keir Starmer, and I know you're going to be unhappy about this, and you are, of course, welcome to tell me that he hasn't proved to be ill-suited to the job, but as you contemplate that possibility, you probably begin to realise what a tricky task that would be. I mean, you can send me a snarky text, by all means. I may even read it out. But if you're going to ring in and say, Keir Starmer has not proved to be ill-suited to the task of Prime Minister, he has fulfilled the loftiest hopes and optimism of his supporters and voters, then as soon as those words start forming in your brain, you must realise that there is a bit of a problem here. In that position. But I don't want you to feel excluded from the conversation. If you want to argue that he's not ill-suited to the role, then do, by all means, call me. But the central question is, why has Sir Keir Starmer proved to be, when historians of the future come to pick over the bones of the first 18 months, even if he goes on to be the longest-serving Prime Minister in history, but why, over the course of the first 18 months, did he seem to be, appear to be, prove to be so ill-suited to this particular role at this particular time? 0345 60 60 973.
LBC. At ulisprosperity.com, you buy the car and we pay you up to £600 per month in rental income. For conditions, visit ulisprosperity.com.
Donations to British Heart Foundation fund scientific research that can help save lives. People like Joe, who's pitching his next big business plan. Maria, who's sending out her wedding invitations. And Jack, who's just being a teenager again. Because when you donate, you fund more than just science. you help save lives. British Heart Foundation funds research that aims to cure inherited heart muscle diseases. But our work is not done. Donate now at bhf.org.uk and keep us beating.
I'm Leah, and this is my NHS story. I could just feel my body didn't feel right, and my GP referred me to CDC. Had some blood tests done, and within 24 hours, I had my results. And that just reassured me that I was being taken seriously.
The government is opening new community diagnostic centres, with many already available 12 hours a day, 7 days a week, so the NHS can be there for all of us when we need it. Find your closest one at gov.uk/NHS Fit for the Future. Available England-wide.
At Ocado, you'll save 25% on your first shop and get free delivery. Which means if you were to buy a four-cheese pizza, you'd basically be getting one of the cheeses for free. Save and splurge at Ocado, the online supermarket. Geographical and other restrictions. Minimum spend £60 and charges apply. New customers only. Maximum saving £20. Terms at ocado.com.
Calling all young creatives. It's time to get prepped for the art and design industry. And where better than Global Academy? Here's Keo, an art and design student in year 12.
As an art student, we get the chance to work on our own pieces, either in the studio or using the digital software. Some of my work has also been shown in galleries, and last week I got the chance to attend a design agency to learn more about my future career.
Global Academy. Apply now and join us in years 10 or 12. GlobalAcademy.com.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
23 minutes after 11 is the time. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Liz Truss, eh? Liz Truss has made a contribution to public discourse that I have to share with you. I don't know. Did we do this? It's not an unhinged headline, is it? It's an unhinged head. So we've got a thing for unhinged headlines. It's Nate's first day in the chair today. Keith usually takes the day after the Super Bowl off. Have I ever told you that before? I'd take a call in a minute, but then what I want you to do, Nate, this is very difficult. I want you to play Unhinged Headline, which is one of the jingles that Keith will have left you with, but I want you to cut it off before we get to line, because it's going to be Unhinged Head, and then we'll talk about what Liz Truss has had to say. Is that something you can do, or is that going to be too difficult? Well, I know you'll do your best, Nate. You always do your best, but are we going to actually get what we want? I don't know, but if we don't, it doesn't matter, because this is all about pulling back the curtain like Toto the dog and letting the dog see the rabbit. When, or if you must, Keir Starmer's tenure as Prime Minister is written up by historians of the future, and they address the question of why the first 18 months appeared to demonstrate that he was very ill-suited to the job. And I fully accept, and part of me still hopes, I think you can tell, that the next 18 months made a complete mockery of this analysis, because he went on to be the finest Prime Minister this country has ever seen. But the first 18 months did not go well, and it was largely down to Keir Starmer's unsuitability for the job. And you're now going to write that paragraph for the history books of the future. Keir Starmer proved to be ill-suited to the job of Prime Minister because... an unhinged head of lettuce. We haven't got time to put that together, have we? Duncan is in Edinburgh. Duncan, what made you pick up the phone?
Hi, James. LTL, FTC.
Well played.
Bit nervous.
Carry on. It's only me.
yeah.
IOM.
I have to say, first of all, really delighted to be speaking to you.
Likewise.
You've given voice to my thoughts and feelings and educated me on a lot of things going on here.
Oh, thank you.
I think, for me, the problem with Starmer is, as you said many times, we were praying for some normality and something boring. But what we actually got was someone with, I don't want to say no personality, but with a personality that does not inspire followership. Followership's like a thing that I think is distinct from leadership. You can lead and you can direct, you can delegate, but if you don't inspire, you don't get followers. And I think that's been borne out by the fact that he doesn't have anyone in his corner, you know, barring a few resignations in support of, you know, it wasn't him, it was me.
Yeah, and this is, did you know, Eleanor and I were having this conversation before we came on air, and I ran by my theory of the three cults, and it's quite hard to believe that there's a cult of Starmer. Unless you're on Blue Sky,
yeah.
You're probably not even aware of it. The idea that there are people who are blindly loyal to Keir Starmer and think he's brilliant, all think he's a man more sinned against than sinning. It's a really tiny cult.
As opposed to Richard Major,
who's a massive cult.
Absolutely. Can't agree with you more on that. I think there's a thing that, that those that who support him, I believe, are more, they're still anchored in with hope.
Yeah,
and better this than, because better this than, you know, God forsake us, but Farage, then, you know, let's go there. I mean,
well, Trump inspires enormous loyalty, and he's hideous. Farage inspires enormous loyalty, and he's hideous. Boris Johnson inspired enormous loyalty, and he's hideous. So you kind of need someone who can inspire some loyalty and not be hideous. It's not a lot to ask, Duncan.
Well, I think it's a natural capability, though, so that people have, and whether they develop it through life, nature or nurture, I don't know, but the people who have personalities who will absolutely engage you and bring you with them, they're dangerous because they can say anything in the case of Trump and Boris Johnson. But there was another thing that you said just before I came on whilst I was waiting that I thought was absolutely was nailing it for me. It's something I've thought a long time, which is you cannot continue to engage the way that we're engaging to get a message through to people who have not been logicked into their position. You've got to go different. You've got to go use the tools at your disposal in the way they do, but for good, or for the alternative message. Because I think telling people they're bad versus good is a horrible way of trying to bring them with you. Mm. It doesn't work. And followers will only follow if they think that you have something that's there for them. And I think that's where you have to say, you know, as despicable as all the racism is, but as powerful as it is, you can't
tell
someone.
You need an antidote. You need a compelling antidote.
Yeah, and you
not
can't just
shouting,
tell them they're
poison,
bad.
Poison,
if you tell
poison.
People they're bad because they're racist because, you've got to look at what is the reasonable part of their view that can then be turned into a message.
I'd say they'd actually tried that, and they discovered there aren't really any reasonable parts of their views, because if you are going to be more disgusted by a crime committed by someone with brown skin than you are by someone with white skin, then you're racist.
I abhor the racism and I hate the way
I know,
that
but they've
out.
Tried to kind of address what are called legitimate concerns, and then end up inviting that Lucy Connolly woman onto stage at your political court. I know Labour didn't do that, but that's what happens when you pretend that these are legitimate concerns.
I think that's what happens when you have a vacuum of an alternative view to feed them. And I think that we could go back, and I'd love to go for a pint with you and have a good solid conversation where I'm not imposing other people's chances to get on the phone to you.
But I think
there are a lot of things that we haven't tried. And I say we, it's a collective, this amorphous blob that can't agree on anything. But I think we all feel like we're on the same side, but we're all pointing in different directions and not, you know, coming together under a great message and a great leader of you know, someone who brings us all into the same follower group.
Someone who can stick a flag in the ground and you would look forward to rallying around it. And that's, I guess, why that brilliant phrase, the loveless landslide, which I think was it Gary O'Donoghue that at Channel 4 News? Anyway, it wasn't me. I can't claim the credit for that one. The loveless landslide is what you're talking about, because it was loveless. There was very few people. You can't imagine anyone getting a Keir Starmer tattoo. In fact, if anyone sent me a picture of their Keir Starmer tattoo, I would put quite a lot of money on it being AI and not actually being real. 11:30 is the time. Duncan, I mean, that was brilliant, actually, but I don't think it was obvious, actually, because you articulate, you could say he's uninspiring, that would be obvious, but it's more than that. His is not a standard to which we muster very passionately or easily. The problem is now that I sound pathetic. Oh, I tell you what I really want. I really want someone who isn't charismatic. I really want someone who is dull. I really want someone who doesn't, you know, prioritise feelings over facts. I really want Keir Starmer, because he'll be the perfect antidote to all of the dishonesty and corruption that we've had since 2016 and since 2010, if you want to add cruelty to the list. And then here he is. And now we're complaining that he's none of the things that we said we didn't want the next Prime Minister to be. Well, I am. It's me. This is me on the hook. I'm criticising me now, nobody else. But I don't think that I'm the only person in the constituency that I've just described. It is 11:31 and Dominic Ellis has your headlines.
Sir Keir Starmer's Director of Communications, Tim Allen, has resigned. It follows the resignation of the Prime Minister's Chief of Staff yesterday in the wake of the Lord Mandelson scandal. The Prince and Princess of Wales say they're deeply concerned by the continued revelations surrounding Jeffrey Epstein. Kensington Palace says William and Kate's thoughts remain focused on the victims. And the Foreign Secretary, Yvette Cooper, says the government will rapidly engage with China on the case of Jimmy Lai. The pro-democracy campaign has been sentenced to 20 years in prison under China's national security law. LBC weather cloudy with outbreaks of rain to end the morning. Some heavy rain will push into the southwest by the late afternoon. A high of 11 degrees.
This is LBC. Nothing beats that electric feeling of live sport. As the proud automotive partner of Team GB, Vauxhall is supporting Britain's extraordinary athletes. Through every nail-biting, glue-to-the-box moment, Vauxhall is working towards a better future for our nation with its electric vehicle range, including the compact Vauxhall Combo Electric Van, made in Britain for Britain. Head to lbc.co.uk and tell us about your own extraordinary work fees to win £1,000.
When an offender is released, the probation service keeps them on track so they can find a place to live, which gives them the stability to say no to old habits, making them more likely to attend their supervision meetings. And all of that ripples out to make the community a better place to live. Search probation service jobs to find out more. An extraordinary job done by someone like you.
Yeah, I'm one of their biggest fans. I've got all the vinyl. First saw them at a tiny little place in Camden. Then as festival headliners a few years back. Oh, now that was special. So there's no chance I'd miss their world tour. In London, Lisbon and LA. Good thing I've been saving.
From down the road to across the globe, saving gets you there. Join the millions of people already saving with NS&I. Visit nsandi.com.
Discover the world of Dobble, back in McDonald's Happy Meal. Race through the worlds of music, sports, space and more. How quickly can your little one spot the match? Dobble's bursting with fun, some food. It's all inside this Happy Meal. Until the 5th of March 2026, from 11 a.m, includes one pre-selected book or toy. Dobble range comprises toys only, while stocks last.
Lost World, Play Barn, Dragon Castle, Children's Farm, Jumping Pillows, Wallabies, Froggy, Stop Play. Tommy Tractor Play Barn, Quadrapillar, Rowing Boats, Towel Displays, Meerkats, Honey Pot, Bears. Kids, put on your swimmers for Jungle Splash.
Yeah, let's go, Mum.
Right. Cannon Arena, Lemurs, Jungle Kingdom, Go-Karts, Wave Runner 2, Magical Wood and Cafe.
Nutcatch Adventure Park. Book now at nutcatch.com.
At Pets in a Pickle, we know what it's like welcoming a new pet into the family. For fuss-free pet insurance policies as unique as they are, visit petsinapickle.co.uk.
James O'Brien on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
It is 11:35 and you are about to witness history. We're launching a new feature on the programme. It may only have one episode. How long did it take me to get a bit of production for my unhinged headline idea? Was it 9 months? From the moment when I asked my top team of hard-working colleagues to, could you get me some production, please, for my unhinged headline feature? And they said, yes, James. And then sat back confident that I'd completely forget. And then when I came back several weeks later, I said, have you got me that production? No, it's on the way, James. It's on the way. And then 3 months later, I said, any sign of that production yet for the unhinged headline? So I've decided to take matters into my own hands for my new feature, which is called Unhinged Head. And it is pretty much just whatever Liz Truss has said lately. And Nate is in the chair today because Keith always takes the day off after the Super Bowl. And he has done some extremely quick and sophisticated work in order to provide us with this.
Unhinged headline.
Nearly. Let's try again. Okay. In order to provide us with this.
Unhinged.
Third time lucky, Nate. Come on, mate. This is why you went to college. In order to...
Unhinged headline.
Oh, it's just impossible to do, isn't it? Oh, dear, can I have a go? What button do I press? Anyway, this is Unhinged Head. Liz just actually wrote these words and presumably read them and then pressed send. Keir Starmer is the Theresa May of the Labour Party. Imagine being Liz Truss and thinking that Theresa May was the bad bit. Anyway, Keir Starmer is the Theresa May of the Labour Party. It's quite long, but it's worth it because the last line is, it's a peach. It's an absolute peach, the last line. If we follow the logic of what happened in the Tory party, Labour members will ultimately replace Starmer with their favourite Angela Rayner, much as Theresa was replaced by Boris. She will fail to achieve anything as the strings will still be pulled by the, wait for it, the Labour Illuminati and the British Deep State. This is all part of Liz Truss's a genuinely hilarious attempt to pretend that her premiership was a disaster because of everything except Liz Truss. The Illuminati, who presumably were in charge when she was in charge, despite being Labour Illuminati, unless there is also Conservative Illuminati, who just sort of clear out of the way whenever the... Anyway. And the British Deep State. Labour MPs will tire of this and will eventually crown Wes Streeting the Rishi Sunak of the Labour Party, who is a creature of the system. Nothing will change and Labour will be crushed in the 2029 election. Are you ready for the killer line here? Nate, get ready. We're going to have one more go at this in a minute, all right? Don't panic, but don't do it until I tell you. NB writes, LT, Liz Truss, there is no Labour Liz Truss, exclamation mark, which must be the most welcome thing Liz Truss has ever written in her life. Seriously, I don't know if she has written a book, hasn't she? She appeared on television to promote it and held it upside down. But of all the words Liz Truss has ever written, the six most welcome words that Liz Truss has ever written must surely be, there is no Labour Liz Truss. Is that a phone-in? Who would be the Labour Liz Truss? No, that can't be. There can't be a Labour Liz Truss. And that concludes the first and almost certainly last episode of
Unhinged Headline.
Oh no! Oh, what? You just gave up. You just gave up, mate, didn't you? Just thought, forget about it. I want to work with a grown-up like Andrew Marr. How have I ended up on this backwater with what is currently by far the biggest show on LBC? Oh, for goodness sake, what, by 50-odd thousand? You can't be right on that. You must be exaggerating. Don't worry, mate. You get through this, mate. You can pick your next shift, honestly. 11:39 is the time. Back to why was Keir Starmer ill-suited to being Prime Minister? And if you think we're going in too early, tell us why he's not. And it's not snidey, by the way, or snarky, genuinely. Robert is in Malmesbury. Robert, what would you like to say?
Hello, James. Hello. LTL and second-time caller.
We don't need to do this. It's going to start getting on my nerves quite soon. But never mind. Carry on. IOM. Go on. LTNB.
Look, Duncan, I think, was partly right. I agreed with a lot of that, the issue of followership. But what's the root cause? And I think the root cause for Starmer's inability to perform as a prime minister is a lack of strategic thinking ability. Mm. He doesn't operate over longer time horizons, which is why we keep having these U-turns. He's the victim of circumstance. He gets pushed from pillar to post.
How did you not see that coming? Is the question.
Did.
No, not you. Wally. I mean him. It's a question. How did he not see that coming? So once or twice, we've said this a few times, haven't we? Once or twice could be marked down as unfortunate, but five or six times it happens and it is downright careless at the very least, isn't it? How could you not see that? How could you not see the reaction from your own party to the two-child benefit cap or to welfare cut? I mean, how could you not see this stuff coming and why didn't you legislate for it before it happened, so to speak?
Because I think, look, he has a track record of achievement. He led an important organisation in the British, institutional fabric.
Yes.
But he led it because of those qualities of detail consciousness, of principledness, if that's a word.
It is now.
Yeah.
I think principle works, actually.
Principle, yes, principle, that's the one. But being a prime minister of a country requires operating across a much broader spectrum. And like I say, you know, one of the distinctive characteristics of strategic thinking is working across longer time horizons. I don't see anything in the path that took him to prime minister that was around that genuine strategic thought, operating over, and by that I mean operating, you know, a 5 to 10 year time horizon.
So we've got, sadly, a lack of inspiration, which is forgivable if, I mean, all of these are forgivable if the other bits aren't true, aren't they? This is probably going to be the Rubik's Cube of analysing Keir Starmer's premiership, is that I don't really care about whether or not he's inspiring, because ultimately his actions could become inspiring even if his personality isn't. But as you've now brought to the table, his actions can't be inspiring, because even if he announced something brilliant yesterday that we all loved, you don't know that it would still be in place a month later.
Exactly. You see, I've had the good fortune of working with leaders across all sorts of organizations, yes, commercial and public sector, etc. You don't have to be charismatic to inspire followership, but you absolutely do need to paint a picture that galvanizes followers. And you can paint that picture in a very mundane, prosaic way. But, you know, it still needs to resonate in terms of speaking to a sense of, right, we're going in a direction. We can see where we're going.
Okay, so here is a question that is grossly unfair, and I apologise for it in advance.
I can cope with that, I think.
I think you can. Name the Prime Minister who had these attributes.
Okay. None of them in the recent past.
Austerity was kind of a ideology, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was an ideology not born out of anything longer term than we've got to tighten our belts.
Yeah, and we'll take it from the people who can afford it least.
Yes.
Because they're never going to vote for us anyway.
Yeah. I did wonder, I mean, Tony Blair was criticised for not really doing much in the entire first term. But I did wonder whether Tony Blair was capable of operating over longer time horizons.
Well, he clearly was, wasn't he?
In
all sorts of areas. And there were, you had a sense that there was always stuff in the pipeline. There was always stuff being assembled or being planned, and big changes made, whether you liked the changes or not, you know, extending higher education to parts of the population it had never reached before, and all sorts of areas in which you would point to progress or at least profound change. I don't know that you could chalk. I don't know what Starmerism is, really. I kind of know what Blairism is. Books have been written about it. I can't see anyone writing a book on Starmerism. And Robert, lovely stuff, thank you. Coming up to 11:45, crikey, where's the day going? If you're just joining us, the breaking political news is that Keir Starmer has not just lost his head honcho, Morgan McSweeney, who walked the plank yesterday, but about an hour ago, his director of communications, Tim Allen, who I was right, he was deputy director under Blair, so he must have been Campbell's number two, so very much of the old school. He has now gone as well. Nobody knows why. I'll have a look at some of the chatter during the next break, but he could have, of course, been eased out by Starmer because they want a complete changing of the guard at Downing Street, or he could be fleeing a sinking ship. Doesn't necessarily make him a rat, or the truth could lie somewhere between those two extremes. We won't know for sure until the memoirs and history books of the future are written. But if they were being written today, how would they answer the question of why Keir Starmer proved in the first 18 months of his premiership, with a constant caveat that it might all change tomorrow, it's unlikely but not impossible, but in the first 18 months of his premiership, why did he appear so poorly suited to the job? It's 11:45.
LBC. This morning on Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Now that we learn that it was Mr. McSweeney who wanted to ensure that Peter Mandelson became our ambassador, if Morgan McSweeney makes all the key decisions, what's the point of Sir Keir Starmer?
Labour Peer Skills Minister Jackie, now Baroness Smith.
The Prime Minister is taking responsibility. He has accepted that this was...
Oh, for goodness sake, Jackie.
He's accepted that this was the wrong decision. He's apologised to Jeffrey Epstein's victims.
Do you know, that's the best laugh I've had since Michael McIntyre on Saturday.
Now he is...
That is risible nonsense.
Well, I don't think there's anything laughable about this.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Back tomorrow morning from 7. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
Discover the world of Dobble, back in McDonald's Happy Meal. Race through the worlds of music, sports, space and more. How quickly can your little one spot the match? Dobble's bursting with fun. Some fun, some food, it's all inside this Happy Meal. Until the 5th of March 2026, from 11 a.m, includes one pre-selected book or toy. Dobble range comprises toys only, while stocks last.
The Volkswagen Fantabulous, Fandabby-dozy, Fandang-a-ding-dong fortnight is here.
Stop. We've been through this, Harry. It's the Volkswagen Fantastic Fortnight. Much snappier.
Oh, okay. From the 2nd to the 16th of February, the Volkswagen Fantastic Fortnight gives you an extra £1,000 towards your finance deposit on top of existing offers on the Polo, Golf, Tiguan and our all-electric ID 3, 4 and 5 with Solutions PCP 7.9% APR representative. Visit your nearest Volkswagen retailer now. Hurry, offer ends 16th of February. Better?
Perfect.
Indemnities may be required. Volkswagen Financial Services.
Donations to British Heart Foundation fund scientific research that can help save lives. People like Joe, who's pitching his next big business plan. Maria, who's sending out her wedding invitations. And Jack, who's just being a teenager again. Because when you donate, you fund more than just science. You help save lives. British Heart Foundation funds research that aims to cure inherited heart muscle diseases. But our work is not done. Donate now at bhf.org.uk and keep us beating.
All right, resistance up. Let's climb.
Okay, here we go.
Oh, my knee's playing up again.
Have you ever had it looked at?
No, but I've been doing a few stretches.
When my shoulder went, Benenden Health got me expert help. Showed me exactly where I was going wrong.
30 seconds, people.
Press play on your health with physiotherapy and much more. All for less than £16 per person per month. Search Benenden Health. Fee review periodically. T's and C's apply. Qualifying periods apply for some services, including physio. UK only. Visit benenden.co.uk.
Across the country, thousands of drivers are feeling electric about switching to an EV. And here's why. They can go from London to Sheffield on a single charge that could cost around a fiver. They're ecstatic about that and the exhilarating feeling behind the wheel. Plus, with charging made simple at home, they're always ready for the drive ahead.
I can see why they're into it. Switch to an EV and get that electric feeling.
Costs and range dependent on tariffs, model and driving habits. For full details, visit gov.uk/clean energy.
This is LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
It is 11:49. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC, where the conversation about the Prime Minister's current travails continues. I mean, I don't know whether it's fair to say, at least we've moved beyond the pretense that he isn't in serious trouble. There's still a few diehards, a little bit like those soldiers that were reputedly found on isolated islands long after the end of the Second World War. They'd find the odd Japanese soldier who thought that the war was still going on. There were still a few people who think that Starmer isn't in real trouble at all and that it's all an invention by the media or the media class, which is obviously bonkers. But the question of whether or not his personal skill set is in infinitely pertinent is what contains us at the moment. I may carry on with this because I've got Bill joining us. Bill Browder's joining us at 12:45 with some, and Bill Browder's always interesting, as you know, but the momentum for a proper investigation into Russian interference in democratic processes in this country is building. I tell you what, if Carol Cadwalader, who of course was insulted by Andrew Neil and called a crazy cat lady, for which he never apologised, despite working for the BBC at a time when you weren't allowed to have opinions, as I found out. But he was, anyway. He called her a crazy cat lady, when really they should have been drawing attention to the pigeons that she owned, because they are coming home to roost now at an almighty rate, aren't they? All of the things that Carol Cadwalader warned us about have turned out to be completely true. And still no apology from Andrew Neil. And Bill and Carol and a few others have been working tirelessly to keep that ship afloat for proper scrutiny of what kind of influence Russia may have been exerting over our democratic processes at around the time Boris Johnson was Foreign Secretary and went to party with a former KGB spy, having slipped the protectorate of his own security officers. It was just a coincidence, I'm sure. Oh, no, hang on. And he also put that KGB spy's son in the House of Lords against the advice of his security service. Oh, that's just a coincidence. Just a reminder that the hot water Keir Starmer finds himself in today is nowhere near as hot as the water in which many politicians habitually find themselves, most obviously Boris Johnson. But, of course, Nigel Farage continues to lead in the polls, and as we know, whenever Nigel Farage is doing well politically, the threads begin to fray. What are you doing, Henry?
I was just trying to move that. Can't do that while I'm talking. Sorry, I'm going over the flipping head.
Just making it sound like I haven't got good microphone technique.
Sorry.
Never mind. Anyway, whenever Nigel Farage is doing well politically, he is always somewhat undermined by questions of competence, borderline corruption, and dishonesty. Henry Riley has been having a look at some of the stories that have happened today, or in the last case. It's Monday, and this is where we are with Reform UK.
Well, there's a few different ones. Should we start in Kent, James, seeing as this was the shop window for the party, as Nigel Farage said? This was a sort of blueprint, the biggest of the 10 councils.
If you want to know what we'll be like in government, have a look at what we do in Kent.
Huge local authority, £2.5 billion budget, and they've, I mean, if we've spoken before about the councillors, just to remind you, they've lost nearly a sixth of their councillors, so there's nine that are now, they were elected as Reform in 2024, they're now no longer in the party. Some have been kicked out, some have been expelled, some suspended, some joined the independent reformers group that we spoke about, one of which wrote an erotic novel, and one has gone to UKIP. Now, the council, back in the news today, they've been accused of telling a blatant lie by the Kent Labour Party. They claimed that they'd saved nearly £40 million in net zero savings, but the I mean, £39.5 million to be precise. Those sort of documented savings were found actually in two lines of what was described as a potential capital project section of the budget plans, which would suggest that they didn't actually have identified funding. And the Labour councillor has said that they were cancelled projects that actually never existed and accused them of being made up. I have to say, James, a Kent spokesperson rejects this.
They saved money by... how?
By plans which were in the potential capital, so potential projects that were coming up that were initially...
It wasn't money that was being spent.
It would appear from this, from the money hadn't actually been spent, no, but
But 40 million quid, so 40 in net zero savings.
Yeah. Well, that's what would have been saved if they had spent 40
million
pounds.
Well, do you know what I heard? They'd save £500 million by cancelling their space programme.
Oh, I see, because you could...
At Kent County Council. That would be the same principle, would it?
It would appear so. They do have to say that the Kent spokesperson said that the figures related to forward-looking assumptions in the published budget book.
Like a space programme.
Like a space programme.
So you come into power and you announce you've made loads of savings. Well, you haven't actually saved anything. You're just not going to spend something in the future on something that you weren't spending anything on in the past.
Yes. Could I talk to you about Wales?
Please. The mammals or the... Or the
no,
or the
sorry, the actual...
Not a principality, the country.
The country, yeah.
Kingdom.
They have a new leader in Wales. It's the first since 2021. You'll recall the Nathan Gill, who was previously the Reform leader in Wales. He, in 2025, was sentenced to 10.5 years in prison after admitting 8 counts of pro-Russian bribery.
Close friend and protégé of Nigel Farage.
He was an MEP at the same time as Nigel Farage. Their new leader is Dan Thomas, a former council leader. He was the Tory leader of Barnet Council.
Is that Barnet in Wales?
No, that's Barnet in North London. Oh. He was the leader of Barnet Council, Conservative, from 2019 to 2022. Nation Cymru reported on Friday that Mr Thomas, who's a former Conservative leader, as I say, had bought a house near Bath. That's Bath in England, to clarify. But the Reform UK Wales leader has said that he had moved back to Wales from London to raise his children, and reports that he didn't live here, he labelled as smear attempts and said that he actually had a property portfolio, but that he was living and had been living in Wales, because in order to stand in the Senedd elections, given he's the leader of Reform in Wales and they're coming up in May, it's a legal requirement that the candidates live in Wales. Now, he says this is a smear from the Welsh establishment, that he does live in Wales, but I mean, the timeline is
well,
something...
He just gives you his address, then.
Well, that's been tricky to obtain, because Nation Cymru, who've done the sort of reporting on this...
Good report, that, actually. I read it at the weekend. Martin Shipton was the byline on the story, and it was actually a masterclass in journalism, I felt. Actually.
And he goes into huge detail about it.
Oh, that's why it's a masterclass.
Yeah, well, absolutely. Yeah. And I mean, so, for instance, the timeline is that... Dan Thomas joined Reform in the summer, i.e. summer of last year, but he continued being a councillor for Finchley Church End in North London until December of last year, so until only a few months ago. But he claims he moved to Wales in 2024, which would suggest he was a North London councillor while living in Wales. He says that if he'd had a by-election, it would have been disruptive and cost the taxpayer tens
what
of thousands.
What did he tell his colleagues in London when he... left London? Did he tell them he was moving to Wales, or did he tell them he was moving to Bath?
He told them he was moving to Bath. Initially. The other curious part of this is Nation Cymru also report that he was not on the electoral register in the area with which he has said that he is from, and so that's Blackwood in Caerphilly, in that particular county borough. They report, Nation Cymru, that he was not on the electoral register in December 2025.
I suppose that's the thing about property portfolios. Sometimes you can... Didn't Farage buy a house by accident? Or say he'd bought a house when he hadn't?
His wife owns the house in Clapton.
Partner.
Can I talk to you as well about a Reform councillor from Worcestershire who resigned on television yesterday?
Is it also from Reform UK, is it?
This is from Reform UK, okay. Yes.
This is all in one day. These are all the scandals and problems surrounding Nigel Farage's outfit, and it's only Monday. It's not even lunchtime yet.
Yeah, 24, 48 hours.
Okay, carry on.
David Taylor, who represents Redditch East in Worcestershire, has left the party live on TV. This was during BBC Politics Midlands. Worcestershire County Council recently warned that it faced effective bankruptcy and has applied to the government for permission to increase council tax by up to 10% from April. I got on the phone to him earlier on, actually, Councillor David Taylor, and he told me why he's quit.
In all honesty, I've been thinking about it for several months. I like to think I was voted in for my transparency and honesty. And if there's something I don't agree with, I'll stand up and say it. The people I represent are struggling as it is. And I cannot stand in front of them and say, we're going to put your council tax up by 10%. And then on the other hand, say, at the same time, we're going to pay a senior director a 10% annual bonus. I can't do that. That's not why I'm in this. That's not why I came into politics. I came into politics to improve services. The people running the council today in Worcestershire, the leadership, haven't been strong enough, in my opinion.
A 10% proposed increase to council tax in that area. Councillor David Taylor says that at a time where they are looking at this retention bonus payment for executives stuck in the craw. Lastly, there is one more, James.
Let's do after the
okay,
news.
Okay, sure.
There's so much going on.
Sorry.
Just that one party that we're going to actually straddle the news and come back to it later. Well, I should also remind people that we are talking about the big political story of the moment, which is the resignation of the Downing Street Director of Communications, Tim Allen, following fast upon the departure of Morgan McSweeney, whose job description temporarily eludes me, but luckily Henry Riley is here.
He was Chief of Staff.
Thank you very much. And we will return to the question of what it is that perhaps best explains Keir Starmer's perceived unsuitability for the role when he arrived in Downing Street with such high expectations. Is it possible that the Welsh fella could his girlfriend have bought a house without anyone knowing quite where the money had come from, but not yet registered it? I don't know where that came from either.
No, I'd have to have a look into that.
All right. Anyway, we'll get back into that. And the other story that Henry has unearthed for your delectation is arguably the most embarrassing or potentially difficult of all four. There are four Reform UK stories, and it is now 12 noon on Monday.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at midday, the director of communications at Downing Street has resigned. Tim Allen says he's stepping down to allow a new number 10 team to be built. It follows the resignation of the Prime Minister's chief of staff yesterday in the wake of the Lord Mandelson scandal. LBC's political editor Natasha Clark says it is a major blow for Sir Keir Starmer.
This is less than 24 hours after the Prime Minister has lost his chief of staff, Morgan McSweeney, and these two people are integral to Keir Starmer's leadership. And, you know, at first this morning, it sort of appeared that the storm may be being weathered, but they are now in full protect the Prime Minister mode. The PM is clearly licking his wounds, reflecting on what's happened.
Sir Keir Starmer will address Labour MPs tonight in a bid to secure their support, but the Conservative leader Kemi Badenoch has told LBC she believes Sir Keir's days in office are numbered.
It's interesting. Tim Allen only came in September. He was in the job 3 months and he's already leaving. Does not give you any confidence that number 10 is being well run. The Prime Minister is in office, not in power. If he can't do the job, then he should step aside and let someone else do it.
Stay with LBC for the latest. The Prince and Princess of Wales say they're deeply concerned by the continued revelations surrounding Jeffrey Epstein. Kensington Palace says William and Kate's thoughts remain focused on the victims. Andrew Mountbatten Windsor has now been accused of sharing confidential trade information with Epstein. Mr. Mountbatten Windsor has previously denied any wrongdoing. The son of the pro-democracy campaigner Jimmy Lai says he will now likely die in prison after being sentenced to 20 years in Hong Kong. The British citizen, who's 78, was found guilty of offences under China's national security law, which he's always denied. A consortium led by the delivery firm FedEx has agreed to buy the parcel locker firm InPost for £6.8 billion. They plan to expand the service across the UK and Europe. And one of Scotland's last surviving D-Day veterans has died at the age of 100. Albert Lamond played a key role in the Allied invasion of Normandy with the Royal Navy. His family say he believed he was just doing his duty. A look at the weather. Cloudy with outbreaks of rain to start the afternoon, but heavy rain will push into the southwest by the late afternoon. A high today of 11 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
To be or not to be.
Right now, we're offering a range of incentives across Audi models.
That is the...
But only until the 28th of February.
The,
So stop whatever you're doing.
I'll be right back. Just carry on without me.
And find yours online or at your local Audi centre. Audi. Vorsprung durch Technik. Terms and conditions apply. Selected models, retail customers and participating Audi centres only.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It's 3 minutes after 12 and you're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Do you want to play a little game or not? It's just a little bit of a diversion from the politics. Henry Riley is with us. He has been running through the stories that are embarrassing Reform UK today. Today, as in, like, today, at 12:04 on Monday, and we're going through four stories that have popped up over the course of the weekend. Not that you'd know it from most media. But if you want a little diversion from that, we could play a game. I just introduced Henry Riley to a new vegetable.
Mm.
A vegetable you'd never heard of before.
No, kaylets.
Sorry, don't give it away, for God's sake. I'm surrounded. You can't do jingles. You can't give...
I'm sorry. I thought you were sort of inviting me.
I was
going to
do a phone in.
Oh, sorry.
Or at least a text in. What vegetable have I just introduced Henry Riley to?
Well, you previously outed me on air for buying the yellow stick of food. So
sorry about that. That's all right. Probably your mum wasn't very pleased about it.
No, I think she was pleased it's been called out finally.
Yeah, you can't go around on a diet of food that's been reduced at closing time in the supermarket, Henry. No,
Veggie kebab, very nice.
Bad for the brand. No, of course you can. It's good. Good for you. Good for you. Bargain hunting. Nothing wrong with that. Kalets.
Yeah. I've just seen I can...
They're delicious.
Get my hands on those bad boys.
I love them.
£1.45. Yeah.
I would recommend the Morrison's Best ones. They're like a cross between a sprout and a cabbage. Or a kale. A kale and a sprout. So they're like flowery sprouts. Flowery sprouts was the name of my first band.
Yeah.
And I air fry them. So toss them in a little bit of olive oil, a few chilli flakes, maybe. Anyway, sorry. Carry on. But back to...
Oh, yes.
Well, I'll let you do this, because I get frightened when there's by-elections about what we can and can't say on air.
So we've done the Net Zero Kent story, the Reform new leader in Wales, the Reform councillor resigning live on TV, David Taylor. The other one is the by-election, as you say, it's taking place later this month in Gorton and Tenter. Actually, I've got Caylets on my screen, so he's going back to what I was on before.
Brassicas.
This is the
government is possibly falling, and we're on LBC talking about brassicas.
This is a letter that has been sent, or purported to be sent by, and handwritten by local resident Patricia Clegg, who's no relation of Sir Nick, but a Reform MP has said the party's done nothing wrong. So what happened is they've sent out a letter, which is done by other parties, and I'll play you in a minute what Rob Ford, the Professor of Politics, has told me about it. But they've sent this letter out to people where she claims, Patricia Clegg, who we haven't heard from subsequently, who said she no longer wanted to vote for Labour, but was in fact going to go for Reform and vote for Reform. Now, the issue was the letter didn't identify the promoter of the material, which is why Greater Manchester Police have confirmed that they are now investigating. The Hardings Print Solutions Limited, the company, have apologised. And I asked Professor Rob Ford what the party could have done wrong in this situation, what might be at fault.
Well, the allegation is that they haven't provided the identification information that is legally required on all election communications within an election campaign. So they've produced this leaflet that looks like it's a letter from a nearby neighbour. That's actually a fairly standard kind of format for leaflets in by-elections, but crucially, voters need to know that this isn't actually a letter from a nearby neighbour, that it has in fact forms part of an official campaign. So parties are always required to provide details of who has commissioned this, which party has done it, which candidate. That would normally all appear on the bottom. If you look up leaflets like this in leaflet archives, you'll see that information always there. That information wasn't on this leaflet, which means that a voter just looking at it would have no idea that it had come from Reform UK or from their candidate in this by-election.
And have Reform done this before, do we know? And do we know anything about Patricia Clegg, the lady who it's signed by?
We don't. I think she is somebody who lives in the seat. That there seem to be investigations ongoing on that. I don't think anyone's spoken to her yet. We do know that Reform have done letters of this, or letter-style leaflets of this kind before.
That's Professor Rob Ford speaking with me, Professor of Political Science. But this letter from Patricia, it's signed a concerned neighbour. Mm. Nothing sort of completely new, but the real issue is there's no imprint as to where it's come from. It should have said from Reform.
Maybe she lives in Wales. Speaking of which, to return to the first story or the second story, possibly the third story that you covered, but not the fourth, because that's the one you just did. There was a comment from the Senate member Alan Davis about this housing confusion regarding the new leader of Reform, not UKIP, in the country. As James Evans said quite recently, Reform is full of hypocrites who have no principles. Who's James Evans?
Well, James Evans is a member of the Senedd, who now represents Reform UK. So he was a Conservative shadow cabinet member on the Senedd in Wales, but he had the whip withdrawn, but he has now joined Nigel Farage's party.
And he's the one who said Reform is full of hypocrites who have no principles.
Yes, he did.
Okay.
He
and
did
he's now
that.
Joined them.
He's now joined Reform UK as of last week, as you say.
Wow. And that is 10 past 12 on a Monday. Well played. I mean, who knows what we'll be discussing either tomorrow or later this week, or indeed possibly later this programme. Henry Riley, thank you very much indeed. I'm very happy to have introduced you to Caylets. Let me know how you get on with them.
Yeah, I will do. Yeah, I'm looking forward to that.
Thank you. Back to the imminent collapse of the current government, stepping away from brassicas for the time being and returning to the only topic that we've talked about today, which is Keir Starmer's ill suitability, and this isn't a place where you will be encountering vicious ad hominems. I think Starmer is clearly a good man who has found himself unexpectedly ill-equipped to do a good job as Prime Minister. And some of the answers we've received to these questions are interesting, and some of them are yet to be heard because you haven't rung in yet. And you can do on 0345 606 0973. Excellent Welsh pronunciations from Henry, says Nick. So well done. Alison is in Crawley. Alison, what would you like to say?
Oh, hi, James.
Hello,
thank
Alison.
You.
Sorry about that. I don't mean, crikey, you were on hold. We were talking about Caylets. Have you ever had a Caylet?
I can't say I have, no.
Well, there you go. The first time for everything. What, where were you on the Prime Minister and his current travails?
Where was I? Well, I think it's really interesting that actually what we've often been heard said for a long, long time is we're fed up of career politicians.
Yes.
So now we have a Prime Minister who is absolutely not a career politician, who's entered politics quite late after an extremely impressive career.
Yes.
So he's clearly, you know, it's not just a good career, it's a very impressive career. I think he has good intentions. We all think he's probably, you know, a decent and a good man. And he's clearly a very capable man. But what he isn't is good at politics. He's rubbish at politics. And, you know, and he's used to operating in a much saner world, because in a sane world, you set out your objectives, so, you know, whatever it is you want to achieve, then you develop your strategy, and then when you get to the implementation phase, you constantly review that strategy, and when you think, oh, right, okay, I hadn't thought of that, let's change that, you change it, because if you don't do that, you're mad, you're intransigent, and you're dangerous, and you're bonkers. In politics...
Yeah, but apart from that,
goodness,
apart from being mad, intransigent, and bonkers, I mean, it's not all bad, is it? Yeah, it is all
yes,
bad.
Yes, but the point is that he's used to being able to change. But what he can't do well, because he's not a career politician and hasn't had a life of it, is articulate well to the general public, so this isn't a U-turn. We've looked at this and, you know, actually, we think it's a reasonable point, so we're amending it in this way, or whatever. And he's not capable of making that communication, you know, clearly.
It's weird, isn't it? Because I think we all perhaps suffer from thinking it must be easy. I do, anyway. I can't quite see how anyone can be so bad at the bits that you have just described, with the very, I think, fair and accurate assessment of the good bits and the bits that he's good at and the track record and the appeal. But how can anybody be so bad? It's just, I keep coming back to the once or twice is forgivable, but five or six times is unforgivable.
Because actually, I mean, in his world, where he's come from, where he's clearly had a very good career,
yes.
If he sets an objective and then has a strategy, and he is absolutely intransigent from that strategy as it moves forward in implementation, he would be regarded as absolutely irresponsible, and that would not be a positive. He's not used to the mad world that is politics, which says that strategy's got to be spot on from the get-go, and we're going to have to defend every line of it.
So you just put it out and adjust it in real time. But again, I know you are being generous and accurate at the same time. There's no reason why he couldn't have hired people that would point this out to him or steer him away from this path. And you know, but it's got a touch of the Dominic Cummings to it, the Morgan McSweeney story, in that, you know, people thought he was a complete genius until he turned out to be anything but.
With that entirely, but that's what I'm talking about, this sort of career politician, because his whole professional life is not grounded in politics, he doesn't really get the importance of that. He thinks being reasonable is reasonable.
Yeah.
And it's not.
I've never had a particular problem with the idea of career politicians. It's always struck me as a bit of a canard, a bit of a red herring. It's a phrase that Farage uses a lot. As far as I can tell, he's been a politician since 1993. And prior to that, he failed to make much of an impression in the city, otherwise he'd no doubt still be there. But, you're doing the opposite. You're pointing out why we probably need career politicians in order to do politics, because unless you're a career footballer, then you're not going to be turning out for a team on Saturday afternoon, are you?
Absolutely, and the thing about it is we as voters need to think about what we want, because we can go in the world that we live in at the moment, and the state of the world, we can go from one thing to another. We can have another five prime ministers in the next 5 years if we want, because none of them will get it perfect. My goodness, look at the agenda, the international politics, the Brexit stuff, the American stuff. There's so much. Gaza, the Middle East, everything. There is so much to be dealing with. And then he's supposed to be absolutely across every single thing in and never make a mistake in the policy area. This is not a reasonable expectation of any human being, and that's not a right-left issue. That's just
I think we all think somebody else would have done better with the same.
It's like the England manager, isn't it? It's like the England manager. We could all make England win the World Cup, couldn't we?
Well, no. Except Gary Southgate was better than Graham Taylor.
Yeah, that's true, but he was a professional. I think if we just got someone from the pub in to manage the England team, we must have a job.
And that is, of course, the plot of a film almost, isn't it? Starring Ricky Thomas. Yeah, and
indeed.
Alison Eleanor told me that you were a brilliant caller, and she was absolutely right.
Oh, well, thank you for that.
Well, thank you very much. So you can't win, can you? We don't want career politicians. Why is Keir Starmer not producing the goods? Because he's not a career politician. He's not used to it. He doesn't have the vocabulary or the skill set that you would have developed over years in Parliament. Whether that's true or not, I don't know. But the point Alison also makes about other issues going on all the time is pertinent. I think he's done very well on the world stage, which is why you never see right-wing media talking about it. But on the stuff that he has on his list of things to do here, by what figure do you think British farm exports to the EU have dropped since Brexit? Is it A, 20%? Is it B, 30%, or is it C, 40%? British farm exports to the EU have dropped nearly blank percent since Brexit. Is it 20, 30, or 40? And don't forget the nearly as well, because that might help you a little bit. And just so you know, I'd like to remind you of the things that I've got wrong over the years, because it makes it easier for me to tell you what you've got wrong without sounding too priggish. It's not fair to typify farmers as having voted for Brexit, as if they are some homogenous group of people who will all move as one. And just because we all drove around the country at the time and saw a lot of signs in a lot of fields urging people to vote for Brexit doesn't mean that farmers deserve what came to them. Many of those farms would have been tenanted, and the landowner would perhaps have been the one that wanted to put the signs up, while the tenant farmer had absolutely nothing to say about it. And the figures are only slightly more than 52-48. The leaning of and the NFU stayed neutral, which in retrospect was probably a mistake. But try not to do that. I did it for years, and it was you that pointed out to me that it wasn't fair and it wasn't right. And even if it was, nobody deserves to be punished repeatedly for the same mistake again and again and again, with no sympathy whatsoever. But all of that is by the by, because the main point here is the game that we're playing after Henry Reilly ruined my last one, Guess the Brassica. British farmers, should we get a jingle for Guess the Brassica? We could do Guess That? No? All right, you don't have to look at me like that. British farm exports to the EU have dropped nearly blank percent since Brexit. I'll give you the answer after this.
LBC.
This is what award-winning customer service sounds like from real Octopus Energy calls.
Octopus are an absolute breath of fresh air.
Our customer service is really good.
People like yourself and all of your colleagues have done such a wonderful job.
Your customer service was tip-top. You know, I couldn't fault it.
You've stepped it up, I think, for an energy company, so well done.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running.
At ulisprosperity.com, you buy the car and we pay you up to £600 per month in rental income. For conditions, visit ulisprosperity.com.
If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, what you thought you were getting may not be what you ended up with. From unexpected site fee increases, running costs, a huge depreciation in value, many owners feel they've been missold. If you think this might be you, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive the compensation you're entitled to. Text ASSIST to 78900 to find out more. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Donations to British Heart Foundation fund scientific research that can help save lives. People like Joe, who's pitching his next big business plan. Maria, who's sending out her wedding invitations. And Jack, who's just being a teenager again. Because when you donate, you fund more than just science. You help save lives. British Heart Foundation funds research that aims to cure inherited heart muscle diseases. But our work is not done. Donate now at bhf.org.uk and keep us beating.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running. Octopus Energy.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
It's 20 minutes after 12. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. 40% exports of British farm products to the European Union have dropped almost 40% in the 5 years since Brexit. This is analysis of HMRC data by the National Farmers Union. And what's odd, of course, is that all of the media outlets that were up in arms about farmers being required to pay half of the inheritance tax that comparable estates in other sectors would have to pay have very, very little, sorry, have absolutely naff all to say about the fact that they actively encouraged farmers to vote for this massive punch in their own faces. Your Daily Mails, your Daily Telegraphs, your Daily Expresses, your usual suspects in my profession of broadcasting, my so-called profession of broadcasting. When are they all going to say sorry to farmers? All right, they're not. Spoiler alert, never. But you'd think they might consider it, wouldn't you? And on it goes, attempts to reset or attempts to take down the trade barriers that have been put up as a consequence of people voting for people who told them that trade barriers were going to come down. 21 minutes after 12 is the time. Back to Keir Starmer. And, the question of what it is about him, and I think it's pretty hard to argue that it isn't, a lot of it is not down to him, that explains I'm saying the poor performance as Prime Minister, why he has been in many ways ill-suited, not in all ways, but in many ways, the dissatisfaction of his own MPs. So, you know, you can wang on all you like about the media, but why do you think Labour MPs, who know more about a biased right-wing media than anybody in the country except me, why do you think Labour MPs are so dissatisfied with Keir Starmer? You see what I mean? And I'm not looking at the events or the list of things that have happened. I'm looking at the hand on the tiller. What was it about that hand? What is it about Keir Starmer, his characteristics, his skill sets? A good man with an amazing track record and an obviously very bright, possessed of integrity. Lots of things we thought we wanted in prime ministers, and hopefully we still will want in prime ministers. All the things, if you like, that Nigel Farage isn't. And yet it hasn't, or they have not equipped him for the job at all. Ben's in Orpington. Ben, what would you like to say?
Hi, James. Good to talk to you. I'd like to argue that it is, in fact, the media that decides on the fate of the Prime Minister. And
well, let's talk about the MPs then. So why are the Labour MPs so unhappy with him?
I think that the thing with Labour Conservative MPs, Labour MPs can hold a grudge and get the word I'm trying to think of here.
But they voted for him to become leader. So, I do have some sympathy for the media are awful, but they're awful to all, as I think you kind of alluded to all prime ministers. Why has Keir Starmer's performance alienated so many previously loyal members of his own parliamentary party? kind of undermines the media argument, doesn't it?
I need to make a couple of points. So I come on to say that if David Cameron had been a Labour Prime Minister, the press would have pounded him out of office. He might have lasted slightly longer than Keir Starmer looks like be to last.
Yes, I agree with that. That's why I'm asking about the Labour MPs. I mean, they maligned the memory of Ed Miliband's dead father, don't forget, as I mentioned an hour ago. So there's nothing new about the right-wing media being hideously biased against Labour prime ministers. And respectfully, I don't think anybody understands that better than Labour politicians. So why are they so dissatisfied with Keir Starmer's performance?
Oh, Labour MPs are dissatisfied because the more left-wing ones hoped for more nationalisations and things like that, and Starmer.
But the previously loyal ones, previously loyal ones, the ones that essentially propelled him to the leadership.
You could say that they.
It's falling apart.
They see the way the media is going, and they go, okay, we better start moving away from that.
Right. So the Labour MPs now are essentially in the pocket of the right wing media.
Yeah, I'd say that. I'd say that it's easier to stand by your Prime Minister when the media is helping you along.
Yeah.
Back to David Cameron.
Why are we talking about David Cameron? He hasn't been Prime Minister for 10 years.
How is David Cameron remembered as a Prime Minister?
Absolutely. Disaster zone, because he called a referendum.
Disaster zone for the referendum, but not like absolute terrible. I think if he was a Labour Prime Minister...
No, but this is all true.
He would have been gone by 2013, I reckon.
Well, it was a coalition, so it wouldn't quite have worked like that anyway. But no, I mean, you're not respectfully going to win any prizes for pointing out how biased the media is. And we both know that things kind of fell apart for you when you start trying to claim that Labour MPs do what the right-wing media tells them to do. The point about a successful Labour leader is that they managed to overcome that. Tony Blair being pretty much the only example in living memory, and he very clearly went far too far in the opposite direction, up to and including becoming godfather to Rupert Murdoch's baby. But it is not the reason why Keir Starmer is in trouble this week. It means that there is a magnifying glass being applied to the trouble that he's in, and that in some quarters there will be dishonest reporting and hypocritical reporting by people who were tickling Boris Johnson's toes, and in Richard Madeley's case continue to do so, while pretending that Keir Starmer's situation is in any way comparable, except insofar as the amount of straws that have accumulated on the camel's back. And those are straws that I'm afraid Labour MPs are not putting there because the Daily Mail has told them to, Ben. And we both know that, don't we?
Straws on the camel's back.
We both know that Labour MPs aren't turning on Keir Starmer because of the Daily Mail. Don't we, honestly?
Let's just admit that's not true. Can I make my...
I'm picking them apart. That's how it works. Let's just admit it's not true.
Can I make my biggest point?
Why are you saving it till last? It's not Sunday lunch. What are they? Roast potatoes?
Okay, my biggest point. Scandals that the Conservative Party does not lead people to call to the resignation of...
This is the same point. Isn't your biggest point. This is the same point you've made all over the place. Exactly the same point. Everybody knows that right-wing politicians get treated completely differently from Labour politicians. It's why I was talking about Ralph Miliband an hour ago, and I fully accept you may not have been listening. But it's not the reason why Keir Starmer is in the trouble that he's in today, because if it was the reason, he'd have been in the same amount of trouble 6 months ago. He'd have been in the same amount of trouble with his own members a year ago. He'd have been in the same amount of trouble over the confected stories regarding him having a curry during lockdown or having some spectacles that were bought by Wahid Ali. It has reached critical mass. And it sounds as if you're in danger of overdosing on copium. It is not the answer to the question. And I know that, Ben, respectfully, because it's an answer I reach for a lot, so I know when it doesn't fit. And this is not about media bias, albeit that Boris Johnson, had he been a Labour Prime Minister, would have been put under intolerable pressure for, if I said off the top of my head, at least 10 things. That would be a bit like being on a quiz show and being asked to gamble on how many questions you're going to get right in a given category. Could we name 10 potential resignation issues that Boris Johnson managed to sail through before he was finally done for? I don't think I could put my money on 10, actually. I could probably do 5 and then regret not going higher because I was cautious. So the 5 things that Johnson would have gone for, to enforce Ben's point while simultaneously refuting it, he'd have gone for the decorations for taking the money and pretending that he'd forgotten where the money came from for tarting up his own flat. He'd have gone for, obviously, the COVID breaches, the myriad breaches of COVID law. I think he'd probably have gone for Dominic Cummings after he lied about Barnard Castle. That could have been a resignation. If it had been Keir Starmer in Downing Street and Morgan McSweeney had driven to Barnard Castle and lied about it during lockdown, then they'd be baying for Keir Starmer's blood. This is Ben's point, and it's worth examining, because although it's not accurate here, it usually is accurate. So that's 3. You've got the time Owen Paterson was found to have breached parliamentary standards, and the response of Boris Johnson and his mates was to attack parliamentary standards. The Prime Ministers generally don't go over ministerial indiscretions, but when ministers broke the ministerial code, Boris Johnson's initial reaction was to defend them, to form a square around the Pritzker. You got the time that he sent Jacob Rees-Mogg to Balmoral to lie to the late Queen. That's 5. If Keir Starmer had done any of these things, the Daily Mail would be absolutely baying for his blood, and an awful lot of the sheeple in this country would be baying along with them. And that's taken me all the way up to the news, and I've done five. And I could carry on, as you know, because I often do. So Ben is not wrong when he points out the ludicrous double standards and hypocrisy of the media, but it's not the answer to today's question. Here's Amelia Cox with your headlines.
Downing Street's Director of Communications has resigned following the Prime Minister's Chief of Staff in the wake of the Lord Mandelson scandal. Tim Allen says he's stepping down to allow a new team to be built at Number 10. The Prince and Princess of Wales say they are deeply concerned by the revelations from the Epstein files. Kensington Palace says William and Kate's thoughts remain focused on the victims. And a 12-year-old boy has been arrested on suspicion of attempted murder over a suspected machete attack. West Midlands Police were called out to the Shirley area of Surly Hull during the weekend. LBC weather, largely cloudy this afternoon with patchy rain pushing northwards, some bright spells developing towards the southeast, heavier rain pushing into the southwest, a high of 11 degrees.
The LBC app. News your way. This is LBC.
Sunlight's guaranteed over 50 plan gave confidence to Jane and Chris. With their insurance sorted, they're becoming naturists. Cutting loose in their birthday suits, feeling elegant and free. But when they answered the door, the postman saw more than he expected to see. Sunlight, a little confidence goes a long way. No medical questions and a cash payout. Search Sunlight cover today.
Premiums paid could exceed the payment. Full cover after 1 year. Ages 49 to 85.
A Southern Train is a place where you can have more me time. A chance to recharge yourself and your phone. To stretch out. Sit back. And when you hear all change, please, you'll know you already have. Go with your flow and save with advanced tickets at southernrailway.com. Terms apply.
Buying a home on a holiday park was the retreat you always wanted. But then came unexpected site fee increases. And that was before the dramatic loss in value. If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, you may have been missold. HolidayParkAdviceCentre.co.uk could help you receive thousands in compensation. Text ASSIST to 78900. That's ASSIST to 78900.
At YouLiveProsperity.com, you buy the car and we pay you up to £600 per month in rental income. For conditions, visit YouLiveProsperity.com.
Donations to British Heart Foundation fund scientific research that can help save lives. People like Joe, who's pitching his next big business plan. Maria, who's sending out her wedding invitations. And Jack, who's just being a teenager again. Because when you donate, you fund more than just science. You help save lives. British Heart Foundation funds research that aims to cure inherited heart muscle diseases. But our work is not done. Donate now at bhf.org.uk and keep us beating.
When you're smiling,
don't let missing teeth stop you smiling. At Banning Dental, our experts could restore your beautiful smile with premium dental implants. See online for our price match promise. Banning Dental Group Clinics. Keep on smiling.
Keep on smiling. Keep on smiling. And the whole world smiles with you.
BanningDental.co.uk.
This is LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
12:33 is the time. I mean, to be fair to the last caller, you don't always listen to the whole 3 hours of the programme, so you probably won't be aware that I began today by talking about cults. Three cults. Two quite obvious cults. And one cult that, unless you're in the cult, or unless you're on sort of cult-adjacent duty, you won't even know that the cult exists. So there's the cult of Johnson, currently led by Richard Madeley, which wants to pretend that what is happening to Starmer at the moment proves that Boris Johnson was somehow badly treated. Even though, to be fair, if he'd been a Labour politician, he never would have become Prime Minister in the first place, because his actions as Foreign Secretary, partying the night away with KGB spy, would have prevented him from doing so. But that, sadly, is not how the media works in this country, which is the point Ben was making. Albeit, he was wrong about this particular moment, in my view. And then you've got the cult of Corbyn, so plenty of people on the left who will never forgive Keir Starmer for winning an election and proving that it was possible if you prioritised it. And then you've got the least known group, which is the cult of Starmer that you probably didn't realise existed until I told you. these are the people that think any criticism of Starmer is unjustified and probably inauthentic, which is why, belatedly, I'm opening up Idiot's Corner for Stella, who's been in touch to write, so disappointed that James O'Brien has jumped onto the same media bandwagon as everyone else, slagging off Starmer. Surely he's not been bought off too. So if you thought that the cult was a bit unfair in the context of that hat-trick, there's your proof that it isn't. Somebody who disagrees with me, in an evidence-based way, must be in receipt of bribes. So you probably thought centrists, sensibles, the grown-ups are in the room now, Keir Starmer fans, they're not nuts. They're not going to sort of do what the far-right did to everyone who was opposed to racism 10 years ago and claim that they were getting checks off George Soros. But there it is. So not only are you accused of taking bribes if you're pointing out that most of Keir Starmer's problems are self-inflicted, but also you're on a list. Surely he's not being bought off too, right, Stella? Who else is on the list, Stella? Who else is... First of all, who's writing the checks? If I have decided that Keir Starmer's premiership has proved to be disappointing, and I'm saying so publicly, who is actually writing the checks? Who is paying me off? Who else is on the list? And how much am I getting? And where is it? I'm still waiting for my checks off George Soros. Never saw a cent. Never saw a red cent off George Soros, despite being accused on a daily basis of being in his pocket. I never saw a penny. So where is it? This check that I'm owed for describing accurately the mess that Keir Starmer has put himself into. And you thought I was exaggerating when I said that the cultishness could extend it right into the heart of centrist dadland, where I live. Martin's in Harrow. What's gone wrong? What is it about him that explains the mess that he's in? Unless, of course, it's the fact that the only people asking the question are doing so because they've been paid off by mysterious forces.
Hi, James. It's been a very good talk this morning. I was just thinking in terms of over the weekend, I listened to various radio programs and watched various TV things. Mm. And I actually thought David Blunkett was very good yesterday.
Go on.
Where he just said he's got to get rid of McSweeney. He said he's not working. And he needs some ordinary people to advise him. I mean, when he was elected, the first thing he did was I'm going to cut the winter fuel allowance. Anybody with a brain knows that the elderly voted country.
It was an odd thing to do. I mean, people said at the time he could have sold it better, and that was probably true. But he still would have struggled to sell that policy as opposed to a tapered policy or a finessed policy or a slightly different policy. To go all in on that from day one was extraordinary, wasn't it?
But what he should have done really was that if he just turned around and said anybody on paying 40% tax doesn't get it, it would have been simple.
Yeah, yeah.
Solved the thing immediately. They would have saved some money, and it was just I just thought this is the wrong thing to do. I mean, I was doing the research earlier. I did A-level politics in sixth form, and one of the things, and I still use it now, is that when a government passes a law, it passes a law thinking we're going to do this with this, and this is what's going to happen. And then when the opposition gets in, they use it for something completely different. He's not thinking about what will the opposition do with this. In the same way that with any...
Yeah. Yeah, that should be the first thing you do, shouldn't it?
I mean, Ed Miliband says, you know, pay a pound and get a vote.
Yeah.
Every Tory in the country joined and voted for Jeremy Corbyn.
Well, they claimed that they were going to, and some certainly did. The stuff that was... You can forgive ambushes, right? But you can't forgive not seeing what's coming towards you at 100 miles an hour. And some of the problems that he's found himself in, he really should have seen coming towards him at 100 miles an hour.
And I suppose the whole Morgan McSweeney thing of that he seemed to be very unpopular in the Labour Party. And he's just kept everybody at arm's length.
And what's the win? What's the trade-off? So, you know, in a utilitarian universe, and this is what many people thought that he was going to bring, was pragmatism and process and, you know, focus on the achievable, the art of the possible, all of that. What's the win? So you've lost credibility, support, salience through all of the things that are well documented, whether it's benefits or whether it's winter fuel or whether it's farmers' inheritance, all of the things that they've calibrated or reversed or U-turned on. What's the win? What were they getting as a benefit of the system that was in place delivering these bad things? What was the good things?
And they pick fights which they don't need to fight. I mean, for me, the first thing, let's be honest, they inherited an absolute shambles. The country, every public service was on its knees. The police, cut to the bone by Theresa May, which I think is the most unforgivable thing for any Home Secretary to ever do, which is why we've got knife crime everywhere in the country, because there's no police anywhere. I know they're trying to change it, but but if you lose your best, most experienced police officers, you've got kids on the street who don't know what they're doing.
And a relative impunity, which we've seen in politics, and we do, as you say, see now in some corners of our communities, in many corners of our communities. 20 to 1 is the time. Thank you, Martin. Lorraine is in Whitehaven. Lorraine, what would you like to say?
Good morning, James.
Hello.
I've had a long think about this over the weekend and changed my mind many times as to whether Starmer should stay and Starmer should go.
Mm.
I'm very sad.
Same.
I had, the hope for what this Labour Party, after 14 years of madness, could do for the country. My heart really is broken by this, because I feel in my heart now Starmer really does have to go. But I look at it through the lens of I'm an English teacher.
Yes.
And I kind of think it's a bit like a Shakespearean tragedy. And his downfall is his fatal flaw, which is he's basically a decent human being. I truly believe that. And I feel that Starmer hasn't been able to make the transition from being the head of public prosecutions, where the world he was in, people probably shared his motivation and desire to serve the public and work for the public good and to trust. And then he's come into, through a process of being in opposition, where he's trusted the people around him, his advisers, and got to where he needed to be, with your Ming Vase metaphor.
Mm.
And then his trust of the people around him, I think, to believe that they are motivated by the same motivations as himself, I think that's what's brought him down.
Yeah.
I think that he doesn't have that political antennae that maybe some people are advising me, because they're going to get something out of this. They're always after the next step.
They may be engaging in a little bit of factionalism themselves, or settling old scores.
And I don't think inherently, at his heart, I might be wrong. I hope I'm not. And that's the reason he has to go, because I don't see how you develop that as part of your character, unless this experience now, having gone through this awful experience this last week, is going to do that for him. And so, sadly, I think he does have to resign. I don't know what happens after this.
You're jumping the gun a bit. I don't know what Sheila's going to do later, but we're not doing that phone-in today. But it does inevitably follow from some of the questions we have been asking, doesn't it? Is it Hamartia?
It does.
You're the English teacher. Is it Hamartia, the fatal flaw?
I think it is, yes.
Hamartia.
I think it is.
So hubris, not hubris. Hubris is the pride.
Well, hubris can be a fatal flaw.
Yeah, but you're not going to describe him being too decent.
No.
Is not hubristic,
no.
Is it? But it could be
oddly. No, I think it's...
All right, then, teach. What Shakespearean hero or titular character do we think that Keir Starmer most resembles?
I think probably Othello. I think... the pouring of poison and pestilence in the ear, I think. Othello, I think, was basically a decent person. Iago,
I mean, just for anyone tuning in now, Keir Starmer hasn't, as far as we're aware, he hasn't killed anyone. Who's Iago,
no,
then?
No, he hasn't. Iago. Who would be Iago? I think it's a collective Iago for Keir Starmer. I think,
loads
and
of
I think
Iagos.
That is the problem. But I also think, James, if I could say, I think that this whole issue with Starmer, I also think, has revealed, and the link to the royal family and the link to the whole Epstein thing, it's kind of screaming from the rooftops. We need a reset in how power operates in this country. And I think that's where Keir Starmer doesn't get it. And
I think he probably gets it more than anybody else does, actually. And yet somehow he had this massive... Well, I don't know if I can say that, because he has messed up so almightily with Mandelson. But you look at what the alternatives are, and they'll be going back to the racism, the misogyny, whatever it is that explains the appeal of far-right politics at 100 miles an hour. The misogyny is weapons grade in the coverage and in the responses to some of the Epstein stuff. It really is.
It's to do with motivation, understanding people's motivation, and I don't think he's got that.
No, I think you're probably right. And isn't it amazing the hair's breadth between a positive and a negative, something that can look like a positive and then the wind changes, Lorraine, and it looks like a negative, even up to and including Mandelson's appointment in the first place, which which an awful lot of people were praising from the rafters, and then overnight, almost literally, it turned into the worst thing he's ever done.
Yeah, exactly. Fickle. And that's why I think, he's not yet relied on his own judgment and his own sense of what should happen, is my interpretation. And I don't think now we will ever see that side of Keir Starmer, because I think I would love to see it, but I think things will move on.
Fred says he's Brutus and McSweeney is Cassius.
Oh, could be, yes, could be.
Do you want to know a secret?
Go on then.
I was in the back of a taxi once with a very, very prominent political commentator, and we were talking about David Cameron, oddly, and they raised the subject of which Shakespearean character David Cameron most resembled, and I can't remember what he said, but I said no, it's Coriolanus. And he went, really, why? I don't know Coriolanus very well. And I explained in great detail why David Cameron's patrician arrogance was reminiscent of Coriolanus's inability to acknowledge the sort of reality of the people. And 2 days later, this chap, or chapess, I don't want to give you too many clues, was on Question Time and made exactly my point. Plagiarism, Lorraine. Blatant.
He took your words.
Blatant plagiarism.
There's a lot of people out there, I imagine, who do that.
Well, I don't know about that, but I thought he was a little bit out of order. 12:47, thank you, Lorraine. I shall be passing off some of your points as my own, no doubt, in the coming days. So I suppose what goes around comes around. Catching up with Bill Browder next. You will know him, of course, as the tireless anti-corruption campaigner and head of the Global Magnitsky Justice Campaign. Also, by dint of those two roles, something of a Kremlin expert. And it is to Russian interference in Western politics that he will be redirecting our attention next.
Coming up at 1 on LBC, Sheila Fogarty.
Should the Prime Minister resign or stay and finish the job? Is UK politics even capable of delivering change? And are the royals bracing for impact?
Sheila Fogarty at 1. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
At Ocado, you'll save 25% on your first shop and get free delivery. Which means if you were to buy a 4-cheese pizza, you'd basically be getting one of the cheeses for free. Save and splurge at Ocado, the online supermarket. Geographical and other restrictions. Minimum spend £60 and charges apply. New customers only. Maximum saving £20. Terms at ocado.com.
At TfL, we're opening up more of London for everyone with step-free access. We're continuing to improve accessibility at many of our stations, and now over 200 stations and counting have step-free access, including the entire Elizabeth Line, DLR and all tram stops. That is how we're making the greener way to travel more accessible to all. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Greener than total estimated petrol and diesel car emissions.
Calling all young creatives. It's time to get prepped for the sports media industry. And what better than Global Academy? Here's Niamh, a sports media student in Year 12.
During class, I've edited football videos for social, reported on games, and even produced my own highlight packages. Working directly with the industry makes me excited for my future career in sports broadcasting.
Global Academy. Apply now and join us in Years 10 or 12. GlobalAcademy.com.
Big Motoring World are big on value. But what does that mean for you? Well, we price check our cars every day, so we can give you the best price. Guaranteed. In fact, 95% of our cars are priced below market value. Big Motoring World, we're big on value. See website for nearest store. Visit bigmotoringworld.co.uk or one of our stores for our price promise and terms and conditions.
at Lidl, get a Valentine's menu worth falling for. With a mouth-watering starter, main, side and dessert from our deluxe range. And top it off with a crisp bottle of Prosecco. All from only £12.95 for two. So go on, dish up a little romance this year. Lidl, more to value. Subject to availability, selected stores, GB only, be drink aware.
At the coast, one call could save lives.
Coast Guard.
In an emergency, call 999 and ask for the Coast Guard.
Driving even a little too fast for the situation is a major cause of collisions, especially on country roads. Think. Don't let your speed creep.
James O'Brien on LBC.
10 minutes to one is the time. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. The message currently sitting at the top of my inbox is in capital letters, and it's come from Mark, and it says, "Have I missed Bill Browder?" To which the answer, Mark, is no, you haven't. He's here now. And he's here largely because the calls for a public inquiry into Russian influence on UK politics and democracy. Would fever pitch be a hyperbole, Bill? Are they reaching fever pitch, these calls, or are we merely marking a significant milestone today?
Marking a milestone. Remember that up until the Putin's invasion of Ukraine, there was a term. It was called Londongrad. Mm. Londongrad was the name of London because there was so much Russian money sloshing around, and everyone loved this money because they could all these barristers and concierges and all these different types of people were cleaning up because of Russian oligarchs, and so nobody wanted to end the gravy train. And of course, a lot of people who were getting this money were people in the House of Lords and former MPs and former government officials who were all lobbying on behalf of the Russians to go easy on them. And of course, there were Russians or people who were Russian who then emigrated to the UK, naturalized, became UK citizens, and then started donating huge amounts of money to various political figures. And so it's a nasty bit of business, and it hasn't stopped. One would have thought that it would be completely, unacceptable to be a pro-Russian member of the establishment, but we now had very recently Lord Wolfson, the shadow attorney general, sitting on the front bench, part of the Conservative Party, and then in his professional duties, working for Roman Abramovich. Remember Roman Abramovich, the owner of Chelsea, whose assets are all frozen in Jersey, trying to get his assets unfrozen. So working for the government and then moonlighting for Roman Abramovich. And so, yeah, I think it's time that we have a big inquiry. I'm glad that it's happening, and I hope that a lot of this nastiness gets flushed out.
Working for the opposition, not the government. Just to clarify, there's been a lot of movement in politics today, but I don't think Wolfson's crossed the floor just yet. The petition calling for a public inquiry into Russian influence, it smashed through the 100,000 signature mark. There's something happening in Westminster today, I think. Are we symbolic or substantive?
Well, I mean, the fact is that there are a number of people in Parliament that continue to be unhappy with Russians doing what they're doing. And there's a lot of people in civil society. I'm one of them who is unhappy with any kind of Russian involvement in our political process. I mean, I've seen what Putin is up to up close and personal. He's a murderer. He's threatened me with death and many of my friends, and some of my friends have been killed by Putin. And so to have, people all with their nice suits, trying to help Russia out and taking money to do it. We'd absolutely need to do something about it. And if it's creeping back in, we need to stop it here and now.
You couldn't really have been proved more right over the years about the extent of this interference and the danger of these tentacles. And yet, as you say, the expected response has still not really been forthcoming. Do you set much store by the Epstein stuff, which obviously everybody's still talking about, and Russia, and Donald Tusk calling for a full inquiry, suggestions that Epstein may have been acting at the Kremlin's behest sometimes, or indeed sucking people into his sordid network on Kremlin instructions?
Well, I don't know. I've read some of these Epstein files. I mean, it's just unbelievable, actually. It's just truly unbelievable. All the different characters involved. I mean, he was running a major influence operation. There's no question about that. It's determined by fact. And of course, we're seeing, in the UK and all over Europe, people losing their jobs who are involved in his influence operation. And then the main question is, what was motivating his influence operation? Was it his own personal influence operation, or was he, is he doing it for somebody else? And I don't think that's been clearly determined. And it may have been sort of an informal influence operation where he was doing stuff for everybody. He was basically, doing a favor for one person in order to get another favor for another. And surely the Russians were involved. There was a guy from the FSB who is his close collaborator, who's now working very closely with Kirill Dmitriev, who is supposedly negotiating peace, but trying to shove a terrible deal down the throats of the Ukrainians. So we don't know what exactly this Epstein thing was all about. And of course, all the files aren't released yet. No. There's only some of the files released, but it sure looks ugly. And it sure has embarrassed a lot of people who, were trying to, trying to pretend that they didn't have anything to do with this guy.
And I suppose, perhaps inevitably, there's a Mandelson dimension to this as well. And I wonder if it actually I know that it highlights your point about the surprising levels of comfort that people had with close proximity to Russian oligarchs. Because Mandelson, of course, and the co-founder of his lobbying firm, Benjamin Weg-Prosser, are in the papers, trying to secure Epstein a last-minute Russian visa through Oleg Deripaska, the billionaire described by Epstein as a friend of Putin. Wheels within wheels. You must be one of the least surprised people on the planet by some of this stuff, Bill.
Well, particularly when it comes to Peter Mandelson, he was the EU trade commissioner. At the time, he had friendship and meetings with Oleg Deripaska in Moscow. He was entertained by Oleg Deripaska on his yacht off of Corfu while he was a trade minister, making trade decisions, which had some benefit to Oleg Deripaska. So, I mean, the whole thing just reeks to high heaven. I don't know whether he did anything, against the rules or just with a conflict of interest or just looks bad. But it sure, I mean, it's high time that this guy, sees the consequences for his what clearly were sleazy actions.
Yes, and that thing where we began this conversation, I mean, I don't know if you've seen the headline in the Telegraph. Epstein ordered hidden cameras at homes with hint Russians could help. That's appearing in the Daily Telegraph now, which is historically being quite sceptical about the necessity of investigating Russian links to UK politics because their favoured politicians have generally benefited from the status quo in recent years. It's that thing you began with, isn't it? I don't think it makes either you or me sound naive or idealistic, but people are not more wary or repulsed by some of these characters. It's just the money, right? It is just the money. The pound signs appear or the dollar signs appear in their eyes, and any semblance of morality or probity gets left on the gangplank.
Well, and that's exactly right. Now, of course, not everybody is guilty of this. There's some very upstanding, decent people who have been very helpful and forthright in all political parties. But there's also been some really disgusting people, again, in all political parties. Mm-hmm. This is not a partisan thing that I'm saying. There's a member of the House of Lords, a Labour member of the House of Lords, who was working for one of the people directly involved in the Magnitsky case, my lawyer who was killed in Russia, trying to get him off the sanctions list. Then of course, there's a number of conservative members of the House of Lords, like the Lord Wolfson that I just mentioned. And then, of course, there was all this nastiness around the Farage and reform and
Nathan Gill taking bribes from a Kremlin stooge to interfere and pollute UK democracy while leading Nigel Farage's operation in Wales. This ain't over yet, but the debate that's happening today, the petition relating to Russian influence in UK politics and democracy, I think it's a step in the right direction. Better late than never, Bill Browder.
Better late than never, absolutely.
Thank you. Bill Browder joining us there, the anti-corruption campaigner and head of the global Magnitsky Justice Campaign. I didn't have the chance to ask him about the money that Vladimir Putin was suggesting he might be able to free up from unfreezing sanctions in order to pay $1 billion to join Donald Trump's Board of Peace. Imagine if you've been asleep for 5 years and you're waking up to listen to this. You'd think I'd gone mad. That's it from me for another day. If you missed any of today's show, it's a bit of a good one, actually. You can listen, it won't keep it up, so you should listen back while you can. On Global Player, it's free, the LBC app. You can stay up to date with all the latest news. Lots of podcasts, including James O'Brien Daily and Full Disclosure. Download the official LBC app for free from your app store now. Coming up at 4 on LBC, it's Tom Swarbrick. But now it's time for Sheila Fogarty.
Thank you, James. Today from 3, new claims Prince Andrew shared UK trade information when he shouldn't. And the Prince and Princess of Wales enter the fray. Should the royals be bracing for impact? Should they tell us more? At 2, Brown, Cameron, May, Johnson Truss, Sunak. Now Starmer fighting to stay in number 10. Is Britain governable at all? 2 resignations from Downing Street since yesterday. Today, the Prime Minister attempts to convince his MPs not to turn on him. Should they? Should they allow him to stay in the post? Because it is kind of down to them at the moment. Or should he go? What would be best for the country? What would be the right thing for Keir Starmer to do today?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 1 o'clock, Downing Street says Sir Keir Starmer is not resigning after losing his Director of Communications shortly after his Chief of Staff. Tim Allen says he is stepping down to allow Number 10 to build a new team in the wake of the Lord Mandelson scandal. Professor Rob Ford is a member of the advisory board at Labour Together. He's given his reaction to LBC.
It's obviously not a great development coming on top of the loss of Morgan McSweeney last week. I wonder if they were allies. I don't know for sure. It just feels like that's a further deepening of a already quite deep crisis. I mean, what's the one thing you really need to be getting right in a situation like this? Communications, and you've just lost the guy that's in charge of that. It's not great.
The Prime Minister is due to address Labour MPs tonight in an attempt to secure their support. In the last few minutes, Thames Valley Police says it is assessing claims Andrew Mountbatten Windsor shared confidential information with Jeffrey Epstein. He's been accused of passing reports to the late sex offender while working as the UK's trade envoy. Andrew has always denied wrongdoing. Earlier, the Prince and Princess of Wales said they are deeply concerned by the continued revelations surrounding the Epstein files. A nursery worker has been found guilty of 8 sex offences, including rape, against 5 toddlers in Bristol. 30-year-old Nathan Bennett worked at Partew King Street Nursery and was caught offending on CCTV last year. Detective Inspector Lucy Ford is from Avon and Somerset Police and has read this statement.
Nathan Bennett was trusted to care for children but committed sexual offences against the very young children at his place of work. An investigation involving such young children was deeply challenging and distressing for all concerned.
The son of Jimmy Lai says he will now likely die in prison. The pro-democracy campaigner has been sentenced to 20 years in jail in Hong Kong. The British citizen, who's 78, has been found guilty of national security offences, which he's always denied. And Scotland have won their first game at the T20 Cricket World Cup. They have convincingly beaten Italy by 73 runs in Kolkata. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 19 points at 10,350. The pound buys $1.36 and €1.14. LBC weather largely cloudy this afternoon with patchy rain pushing northwards, some bright spells developing towards the southeast, heavier rain pushing into the southwest, a high of 11 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Amelia Cox.
So, you're geared up for this Making Tax Digital thing?
Sure, I just need some new mud boards, bag of cavity tyres and a couple of lintels.
Hey, MTD, mate, digital taxes.
Mm-hmm, it's an extension down Station Road on the corner.
Dave, digital taxes, mate.
Yeah, probably will need some 2x4s. I want to go to take the van in for a new fan belt, squeaky.
Hey, Making Tax Digital, Dave.
Avoiding MTD. Sage makes tax simpler for sole traders. Search Sage MTD to get your free software today.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Sheila Fogarty.
Hello there, good afternoon to you. There's plenty of speculation in the papers and on air over the weekend as to just how much longer Keir Starmer can last. I wonder what you think about what he should do. If the various potential replacements for him decide amongst themselves and for themselves that they aren't ready to leap or don't want to be the first person that leaps, and in the end nobody leaps and tries to take the crown from him, then I wonder whether he will end up staying in office in a way for the same reasons he ended up in office, which is not him, but the worse them, or the unready them in this case. I wonder whether that's where we'll find ourselves for a time. I mean, I think his time is up. It's a question of how much longer he has working that out and trying to continue to do the job. What do you say? Do you think he should stay? The Pat McFadden argument that Keir Starmer should stay in place, that we've had enough of chopping and changing prime ministers, and it is never just about one prime minister. Government is about much more than that. Or should he go? 0345 6060973, the number to call. It might not be for you, the Epstein files and the Mandelson story, that is the reason you want Keir Starmer to go. You may have other reasons to feel disappointed in his time in office. I'll talk to Luke Trill in just a few minutes, UK Director of More in Common, who is constantly speaking to the British public about their views on all kinds of politicians and politics. But on Nick Ferrari at breakfast this morning, the Labour peer Baroness Smith, Jackie Smith, used to be Home Secretary, amongst other jobs that she held, very much a product of New Labour. She rejected suggestions that the Prime Minister is currently shifting the blame to other people.
The Prime Minister is taking responsibility. He has accepted... He's accepted that this was the wrong decision. He's apologised to Jeffrey Epstein's victims.
Do you know that's the best laugh I've had since Michael McIntyre on Saturday?
Now he
is risible
well,
nonsense.
Well, I don't think there's anything laughable about this.
To say that he's taken responsibility.
I was in the middle of explaining to you how he's taking responsibility. First of all, as soon as it became clear what the extent of Peter Mandelson's relationship with Jeffrey Epstein, the Prime Minister fired him in the middle of the night. Secondly, he has apologised to Jeffrey Epstein's victims for making this decision. Thirdly, he's recognised that how we got here was both a function of the appointments process, which needs to be reformed, and he will take action on that.
It's also
a function, Nick, of the fact that...
So it's Peter Mandelson's fault, it's Morgan McSweeney's fault.
Well, frankly, it is Peter Mandelson's
fault. It's the appointments procedure's fault. It's nothing to do with the... How does he get through his... Everything conspires against him.
Nick,
it's lucky he gets up in the morning, really, isn't it?
Nick, you're off on one, but I did just say that the Prime Minister has taken responsibility...
Has he? Well, speaking to LBC this morning, the Conservative Party leader, Kemi Badenoch, accused the Prime Minister simply of poor leadership.
Tim Allen only came in September. He was in the job 3 months and he's already leaving. Does not give you any confidence that number 10 is being well run. The Prime Minister is in office, not in power. If he can't do the job, then he should step aside and let someone else do it.
Do you think he eventually will?
I have said it's a matter of when, not if. When, I don't know. That is up to Labour MPs. I made an offer to them last week. If they want to hold a confidence vote, they should come to my whip's office. I'm the only person who can trigger that as leader of the opposition. But the big issue is that the country is not being governed. The economy is going backwards. Unemployment is increasing. The government is not focused on their issues, only on their internal psychodrama.
And you've mentioned some Labour MPs have indicated they want a confidence vote. Is that right?
Yes. Labour MPs are in despair at the Prime Minister. Most of them don't know what to do. And you can see that they're actually calling for him to stand down. Many of them have done so publicly.
That was the Conservative leader, Kemi Badenoch, this morning speaking to LBC. The Tim Allen that she refers to at the very beginning of that clip we played is, or was until this morning, Keir Starmer's Director of Communications. So he was the second to resign, Morgan McSweeney, yesterday afternoon, of course, the PM's Chief of Staff, as was. He quit yesterday. So let's talk about what you think about the position that Keir Starmer finds himself in. Should he stay? Do you want the continuity of the current Prime Minister who has been elected to stay? Or do you think he's blown it? 0345 6060973. Worth saying he's meeting his parliamentary Labour Party colleagues, MPs, in the Commons today. So we'll see what comes from that. The number to call...